Just want to let you know that this meeting is being recorded, so be advised.
There he is.
Well, that part wasn't, was it? My sales pitch.
And Adam's here, so I think we can go ahead and get started.
Sorry.
We'll bring this meeting of the Clark County Parks Commission together for our monthly meeting. We will start the meeting off with public comment. If anybody has something they'd like to share with us, we have 3 to 5, 3 minutes for each person. And Sue, I think you would like to say something.
Yeah, mine will probably be shorter than that. I wasn't planning on saying anything, but I will. Shaker Park, which is down here, wind-up transfer agreement between Clark County and the City of Vancouver. And I assume that this has been in the mix for a while. I know when they first purchased Shaker Park, we weren't notified until the Daly County Commissioners approved it. And there was a lot of questionable behind-the-scenes things that I was concerned about. But anyway, we got a nice park. Now it's going back to the city. I've given the reason I'm still concerned about it, though. We have neighbors around the park that are volunteering to put a trail in. If we can get the pebbles or whatever we need for a trail, if we want to walk the trail. And they're volunteering to do a lot of work on the park. But we really need to know exactly what's going on. We need to be told. See, I wasn't even told about the transfer until I happened to show up at a commissioner's meeting and it was announced.
And I also volunteered, as you know, to help lay out the trail around it with the help of our park team. So
right.
We'll keep moving forward with that. I think.
You want me to talk about that just briefly? Or?
I think we'll hold that for the time at the commission. But yes. your concern just that we be more transparent with everything that's going on with your real issues. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh. And the neighborhood association needs to know.
You got an ally here next door to me keep us in the loop, and I know that there's some actions going on we will be talking about a little later, and hopefully you'll get your answers when we make the presentation.
Great.
Anyone else? Thank you for bringing that up, by the way. Okay, well, we'll move right into the meeting then, and we'll start with a roll call. So we're honored to have our honorary member here today, and so we'll start with you. Why don't you introduce yourself to the crowd, even though everybody knows you.
Jennifer Halleck, Vancouver Public Schools.
Jean Akers, Conservation Techniques.
And she's a consultant helping us with the comprehensive plan.
Christopher Fay, Evergreen Public Schools.
So you'll be the ongoing person in lieu of Gail Spolick.
Mm-hmm.
And your name was what again?
Christopher Fay, F-A-Y.
F-A-Y. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
I can't tell you enough about how important it is for us to have good relationships with the districts, school districts, so we hope you'll continue to be involved. Right, Jennifer?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Marcia?
Oh, Marcia King. Reading this, it's wrong, but I'll say that.
I'm Candace Curtis.
And Jeff Knighton with Clark County Community Planning. Bill Bierke, manager for Clark County Parks. It's good to have you all here.
Leanne Mattis, office assistant to Clark County Parks.
If you want anything done, go to Leanne.
There you go, perfect.
Okay, well, that's everybody. I'm Kelly Pudgy, the co-chair.
Barbara Anderson, co-chair.
Adam Mabuka.
Adam is going to be a very interesting new member of the commission we've got. I think it's going to be fun to have this group together.
Cool.
See, what do we... Oh, well, you've already said about the board meeting being recorded. We need to review the minutes, and the minutes are in the packet. Anybody have any concerns about the minutes? Yes.
On page 1 of 2, it says this will be a short term until the end of the year. Kelly and Marcia agreed to be co-chairs. I don't think so. I think Barbara did.
Oh, Barbara.
Okay. I think I made the motion, but I didn't.
Sorry. My bad. I fixed it.
It's okay.
So, any other comments on the...
You just did that so you wouldn't have to be over here shuffling papers.
Okay, well, with that...
It is amended.
Yeah, say that louder so we just got it.
Oh, I said the minute stand is amended.
And we are... Any objections to that? All in favor, we say aye.
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 Okay. Next, we are going to do the co-chairs again. I guess we're in charge of the guiding principles here. I'm not sure if I'm prepared to really do that, so I'm going to push that over to Bill to do, because they have been given... as we have been given those guiding principles on packet. I thought we did that last meeting. Which one was it?
Where is it?
Look in the under the tab, one PAB member info, like the second page back. I don't know if we actually have a.
Well, I read it the other day, so I know it's here, but. But you did bring it up at the last meeting.
I did, yeah.
What basically the. Just cut it to the quick here. We're going to treat each other with respect. We want to hear from all of you, and we want this to be a group of people that have individual ideas, but we'll speak to each other in respectful terms and move forward with developing the best park system in the region. How's that?
Absolutely. And then, you know, there may be times when it gets a little heated on discussion, and just need to be mindful of each other's role. And just, we can be somewhat tough on the issues, but soft on the people. And just be very respectful of each other, and be passionate, articulate, and committed to the parks and recreation.
This might be for time to mention that about the different from Robert's rules, of the way the layout is.
Right. One of the things we have talked about is Robert's Rules usually has a motion made, and then you have discussion. What we probably will follow is more of a principle where we will have a discussion, then develop a motion, and then if anybody still wants more discussion, we will do that. Basically, that is because we're all pretty new at this. We're in some new territory. Every issue we'll probably be discussing will take a little more discussion, a little more education before we really get into a position of writing a motion.
Yeah.
And then we're going to, Barbara's got a procedure here that we're going to be very precise about our motions. So we know exactly what we're voting on. It'll be written down, and we'll ask people to actually write it down before we vote.
One thing I would like to state is that if we have action items, we'll try to bring that up at the current meeting, and where you can actually take action on it at the second meeting, which gives you time to absorb. And there might be time that we'll present you with some handouts or email them to you, so you can get as much information as you need to prior to making a decision at the next meeting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, the better job of getting the information, the better we'll be. But at the same time, there will be questions, and that discussion period is important.
Yes.
Yeah. So actually, on the process, I was going to attempt to capture the motion for Kelly so he can focus on running the meeting. Because the chair should always repeat the motion that's being voted on before we vote. That way we're clear about what we're voting on. And the reason I point this out is that we have an opening for the secretary, which is down in just a little bit. And if they know that this key factor will be passed off to them, they might be feeling a little more like they would take it on.
Right.
So we'll capture the motions, which is a key thing.
So that's some of our process that we want to follow as we move forward in the following meetings. The other thing we have is a little unfinished business is nomination of a secretary for the commission. And we didn't feel we had enough information at the last meeting. However, this meeting, I think we are, if anybody would entertain being nominated, we'd sure like to have that. One of the processes is capturing these statements that we're going to have. So those will be prepared for us, but we do need to keep some minutes of our meetings, and we're needing a secretary for that.
Correct. And one thing to add in there is that when Barbara and Kelly met with me to talk about, you know, how our meeting minutes were going to be written down, we're basically capturing the action items. So that's essentially it. This meeting is being recorded, so it will go into our park grid. And so anybody can listen to this to the minutes of this meeting just by going onto the Parks web page and listening on the grid. And so there's no real need to capture everything that's stated here in writing. So it should be a fairly simple process to capture the meeting minutes. So based on action items, okay. Hope that helps.
So Adam, would you consider secretary?
Sure.
Hey, that was easier than I was going to hit you next.
Only if Marcia does too.
Right now. We have a template that Leanne fine tuned from my other group, so it'll be plug and play. Good man.
Build a plane while it's flying. Figure out what needs to be done.
Well, I would really appreciate it, and I think the group would appreciate it if you were to step up and take
sure.
that position, and we can do a verbal vote on it. I think that would be appropriate. So all in okay. favor of Adam being the secretary.
You know the definition of railroad?
Hey, you're a
Are
master
you
at it.
I got the T-shirt.
But you're the master at this. So,
this was a motion placed by Kelly.
Placed by me.
Second. I'll second. Oh, Marcia will second. And B A B
U K A.
Really? U K A.
Oh yeah.
I really want name tags.
You're right. That's what.
Or we could have.
Or the things they used to do.
That's yeah. really nice. Because a lot of times the members coming here want to know who we are.
Yes.
So we'll just do the card on the table.
Oh. Okay, now I'll let you
down.
Thank
you.
I can get some from this if you think of
it. Any discussion? No.
Any discussion? How about all in favor?
Aye. Any opposed? Adam,
I'll tell you, Adam, you just made my day. So I was worried about that piece of this operation, and we've got it now. So there we go. That goes right here for now. Okay. With that, we'll move into unfinished business. I believe Bill's going to take on the unfinished
sure.
business.
Yes, the right steward acquisition. We talked about this at our last FAB meeting. And basically, the county wants to purchase this property. It's attached to Paleta.
Can you show us on the map where it is?
Do we have that on a slide, Jeremy, by chance? Maybe you can pull it up on GIS. You can show exactly what it's about.
Yeah.
It might be on a notebook here, too. I'm not sure.
Either way, so we know where we're talking.
On the back side, isn't it? Oh. We got it in here from last time.
How was the price determined for the property?
It was determined through an assessment for market value of the property. And what it is, it's a 0.4 acre parcel. And it's at the entrance of the Paletta Neighborhood Park, or Community Park. And it's basically the entrance into Paletta Community Park is really narrow. We have homes on both sides. And so it really doesn't allow for a good view into the park itself. And so if we do acquire this piece of property, this will not only open up the entrance to the park so we have better police patrol just cruising by, but it also is going to provide us more parking. We do have a major sports component there with soccer.
That's Schaefer.
Wrong field.
We're going to
Paletta.
Paletta Park.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
Stewart Park.
This Stewart
Park. They're both S sounds.
And there's been a long time need for additional parking where folks have been parking out on the streets in the front
right
of the park,
there.
Behind the park.
That's Eisenhower Park. It's up and to your left, Mark?
Yeah.
So keep going and now go left on 119. And go up just a little bit more.
Ten more blocks north.
Yeah, you got to go north. That's the Erickson
there
property.
Right
up. There we go, Paletta Park. Uh huh.
17,
13, 14. Yes, there. Thank you. Where is the property?
Just bring
it
a little bit closer. No.
It's
the
right, yeah.
Those,
that property there.
And there? Let's bring the whole thing over. It's a little bit easier. There we go. Okay. All right. So this is the parcel in question right here. So you can see we've got a home here. Here's our narrow entrance into Paletta Community Park. And this is the piece in question. It's 0.4 acres. And if we do purchase this property, the purchase price would be $200,000 based on fair market value. Once we acquire the property, we'll use PIP Level 1 funds to do a PIP Level 1 cleanup. That's removing this house. I'm removing this Quonset hut, and the owners will be responsible for removing all the other stuff that's on the site. We will basically clear the property, keep some of the trees that are desirable, remove the other ones, put a fence along the face of the park, and then obviously we want to try to provide additional parking in here. So that might be somewhat challenging because if we have to gravel it, that's an impervious surface, so there might be some treatment that we'll have to provide. Currently, there's a big bioswale right here that's off street. That bioswale actually streets this road right here. So that is what we intend to do. Currently, we're still in negotiations. We were hoping that we'd be farther along by now with that, but it's three people in the family, and two that desperately want to sell the property to us. The other one does not. So we're trying to work through that right now. So I wish I had more to tell you about our progress on that. Once we do actually get, if our offer is accepted, then what I'll need is your approval to move forward with that.
So you're just informing us today we won't do any action today?
Right. Okay. I don't see anything happening right away, but I do want to ask that, we...
Can you pull that up so we can see the whole park and how this...
Sure.
I guess to pull it down. So you can get a feel for Paletta Park being all of that land.
Yes, this is considered the community park aspect of Paletta Park. There's a fence that goes across here with an opening. This is considered the neighborhood park. That was the agreement that we made at the time.
There's no fence there anymore.
What's that?
There's no fence there.
I think
there.
It was removed, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so the intent at the time was to have a little neighborhood park here and then the community park. And, of course, we've got soccer fields here and here and a small baseball field. And so, as you can see, these streets are really narrow here and also on the north side of the park. And it's really gets very congested, particularly when teams show up before the other teams are done. There's just no place for people to park, and so they're parking wherever they can. And it's been an ongoing problem. So by adding this area as a parking lot, that should substantially help our situation there.
And what's the total acreage of the entire park here?
Good question. 18, I believe.
So it's a considerable community park. You can see all the parking they have already, but I've been in there a number of times and couldn't find the park.
Exactly. Yes. And then in the main parking lot already, there's a basketball court right here.
It's actually out here in the middle, which just got recently damaged. But you know, when there's no sports going on, the park settles down, get the next door here that way. We've had no problems.
Is there consideration for turning the north end of the property into a parking area versus? I mean, not that those homes going away wouldn't be a nice improvement.
I was talking with Melada last night, though. She called because she was not able to make it to the meeting today. And her statement to me was that bioswale or there, that it has some, and I don't know if it's the right term, sewage odor associated with it that makes it a less desirable area to play near. But it would be perfect to park your car by. And the neighborhood association is very supportive of this because, as Kelly pointed out, I too have been down there several times and can't find a place to park.
Yeah. I was just thinking in terms of that north end up there, which is not utilized. There is a fence between it. It's just sort of... it's just next to the walking path. So I just didn't know if, you know...
This area right here.
It might be possible to explore that.
Yeah. I mean,
if it's a neighborhood park, though, that typically speaking, we don't provide off-street parking for neighborhood parks. So it would make sense that the community park...
Oh, is that sort of the... still the designation?
At the time, that's...
Just a thought. I mean, removing all of that next to the park is a really grand idea. I just wondered if... there was, you know, if we do need even additional parking up on the north end, there is a lot of underutilized green space up there that is an option, maybe.
How many spaces will that provide?
Now, as you're here in the bathroom, are you talking about the area that's over near Sergeant Brad? Yeah, I'm familiar. I'm just trying to.
On 127th Street, at the very top of the property, that after you exit from the soccer field, there's just sort of a green. There's a fence and then green space.
Yeah.
So I didn't know. No one seems to utilize that part of the park except to walk through on the path to get to 127th. So I didn't know.
You're not talking about where we play soccer.
No. North of the soccer field. Yeah. North of the trail. North of the soccer field.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, we need more parking.
Well, it's nice that we're aware that where it is, and everybody knows that part of the community. And to me, it looks like a very positive thing to do. It's always bothered me that entrance has been so narrow.
It's been so narrow, and it's just not a great fascia for a park. You know, it's just nice to have a broad entrance so you can look clearly into the park and see what's going on. So that would provide that.
As well.
Yeah.
So you're not looking for action today, or you are?
Well, I just want your approval to proceed. Once we have made an offer, but we have not gotten anything back from them as of yet. So we'd like to have your permission to proceed through the purchase of the property.
Advisory.
There you go.
And it does kind of fall into that new perspective of where we don't have the ability to maybe build a whole new park. To use the PIF funds in an area to augment existing ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of the new approaches that we talked about last time, right?
Right. And so once we do get an offer back or a consensus with the sellers, my process would be to write up a staff report and, you know, with the information, the offer, the value of the property. And through Keith Henderson, our director, submit that to the Board of County Commissioners. But I'd also like to write to the staff report that our advisory board, you know, recommends with the purchase.
So, would anybody like to make a motion on this, and then we'll get this in writing? And
how much do you figure it's going to cost to develop it?
Well, the PIF level one cleanup, we've got to tear down the house and the Quonset hut. We've got to put up a fence along the face of the property. I would hope to get some gravel in there, do some tree work. And I do not know. I mean, this property's been there. It was actually one of the homesteaders in that area, so there might be a lot of subsurface debris that we'll have to contend
environmental
with.
Environmental cleanup, I would think, on that site.
So,
probably why you have
Jeremy, do you have an idea of what it might cost us? It might be about $40,000 to $50,000. Okay. And so, of course, you know, we have to remove the septic tank.
For how many parking spaces are you talking about?
You know, I haven't actually...
Isn't it just over a half acre?
It's under. It's 0.4 acres.
I knew it's either just over or just under.
Yeah, just under.
Have we looked at having the fire people burn it down as a drill? They did that down there when they were working on 10th Avenue.
They have. We've
it was
done
interesting.
That, we've done that in the past.
Yeah.
And we can offer that up if we wish. I don't know if it's going to be disruptive to the community to have a big house going fire, but that is an option. We can.
Yeah.
We
well,
can
they burnt down two houses there on the corner of 149th and 10th. Which is a very populous
sure.
area, but it was kind of exciting to
still
watch.
Do the asbestos abatement. Well, there's actually a condition on the tear down of the house, so it probably rules out the burning.
Oh.
The current property owners think that there might be some relics in the walls, so they want to, as the house is being torn down, they just want to inspect periodically to see what,
oh.
what treasures might be found, and so that might rule out the burning.
Well, should we just
so
write
like
a motion
for 50,
that
we
are
we could
endorsing
on
the
north end.
Process of moving forward with
the
acquisition and development of the property? That way?
Yes.
Can you articulate what I just said?
Oh, do you want to place a motion?
I'll make the motion
okay,
if you're willing to write it down.
I will.
I do like the idea of if there's property already up, if you already have property up above, what would it take, or even if it's possible to use what you already have to see if there's a possibility to put a new pavement, you know, some more parking up north.
Up on the north side?
Yeah, that'd be an interesting thing to find out, because then you've got, because if the soccer field's right on the north side anyway, right,
mm-hmm.
that'd be closer to individuals wanting to play soccer. So
if that area, though, is considered a community, a neighborhood park, I don't think we want to interfere in standards for a neighborhood park by providing parking. If we want to do that, we need to pursue changing the entire property to community park.
Well, it is a community park.
Well,
the whole thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah, we do use it.
It shouldn't be designated.
But
it shouldn't be a neighborhood park.
Yeah.
It is a
community park.
But
community
there
park.
Are
but even
neighborhoods that want to think that a portion of this property is set aside for their
yeah.
purpose.
Yeah. But we do have a soccer. I mean, the big soccer fields are here, and we do have towards the north. The one soccer field there,
mm-hmm.
and I don't see where there's that much space. I mean, you might be able to get one little line.
See how the soccer field is sort of outlined inside the walking path on the northern slice.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from the path
north.
Is fenced, yeah, and then everything north. There we go.
There you go.
Is underutilized. Mm-hmm. No one's ever there because the fence. People come through the gated fenced area and they play in the field.
North room. See, I just. I'm,
are you all talking about?
I'm geographically
challenged today,
and so I'm just thinking of standing in the park because we go there a lot.
So when you're standing in the park and you're looking at the play structures,
mm-hmm.
and you look to the right and there's a soccer field.
Oh wait a second! I've got to turn around then because I can't.
Okay, bathrooms are in the back of me. The play structure is right in front of me.
Yep.
And you look to your right.
Yep.
It's a big soccer field
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And then to the north of that, there's quite a bit of property that's just underutilized and fenced off.
Why?
Do you ever walk out that
oh,
way?
Yeah, we do. But we play soccer there, and by the time we finish playing soccer, I just.
You walk it when you go there.
It's
probably
space.
Three times as large as the 0.59 acres that's on the south end.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and look
and
with a different eye.
Different entrance.
Both sides, exactly. So
yeah.
you've got people
yeah.
coming and going and not all dependent and
yeah.
and taxing that one street from all of those neighbors.
Yes.
Well, I think that's a good consideration if that's
yeah.
the case.
Just
I will go back and with a different eye to it this time. See, I just envision us with our chairs along there,
yeah,
and it doesn't seem like there's much room after we're there.
Yeah,
I think it's important that we consider that because
I do too.
If
that is an option,
the county already has,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it has the property. You have
yeah.
the funds to do what you need to do to
yeah.
fix it.
Mm-hmm. It's far less.
It's
to
yeah.
develop
yeah.
it.
It's not $200,000 for 40 parking spaces.
Right.
Yeah.
That kind of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And wait
no.
till those people oh, want to sell their house, and then I bet you they'll sell it for a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Nonetheless,
so.
Of course, $200,000
I don't
for
see that
house
much
house
we don't do
those.
So I got to go back to the new eye.
Yeah, because you don't see it, because it's sort
yeah.
of...
Well, I'm just thinking of even when
okay.
we do our parade and we go down the
oh, yeah.
thing,
yeah.
you know,
It's just, so I like the table.
I never like 8 parking places along there.
I think there's more discussion deserved on this.
Sure.
I think it's a worthy notion. However, there will be some steps if, in fact, we are eliminating a neighborhood park. We don't just do it. We've got to go through the process.
Yeah. Well, is that something maybe next meeting we could talk about what those processes are and what kind of procedures that would help?
We'll do that as we do the comp plan. You'll start understanding the neighborhood parks versus the community parks versus the regional parks. Yeah. So we'll talk about it in terms of the comp plan and how we put neighborhood parks within a certain distance of each of them.
No, but I mean to change a category of one that's categorized a certain type of park. I'm sure there's something you have to do if you're going to turn it into, for example, if it was approved to make it a parking lot, I'm sure there's something.
It'll affect our service levels, you know, as far as neighborhood parks versus community.
And so I guess I would be interested to see what the pros and cons of doing that, because maybe that makes sense, but it might not in the long term of things. So that'd be something that I would think we'd want to look at.
It's worthy of pursuit.
I'm willing to bet that somewhere back, quite a ways back in the planning process of that neighborhood, they had a reason for wanting that to be a neighborhood park.
It was a requirement at the time. That's why it was fenced off separately with openings that went into the community aspect of it. And typically with neighborhood parks, there is no parking. It's considered walk to. The most we've done in the past is added a half street improvement. And so that is something to be considered as well. So getting back to the other piece of property, the steward acquisition, the couple points there, and that is, I think it's going to really improve the aesthetics of the face of the park, which is the main entrance of the community park, which is really narrow right now. It will provide the extra parking, you know, for the community park itself. And so just something to consider for our next meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
Good place to visit before our next meeting.
So we'll definitely make sure this is back on the agenda for the
following. You're not there all the time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Do we need to move on tabling it? Tabling your motion?
Yes.
I didn't even scribble on here, so it didn't even get verbalized.
It didn't get to the point of a nomination.
Great.
Hey, Kelly, before we move on, under number 3, we were going to talk about mission statements.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I skipped that one over there.
Mm-hmm.
And is that your topic? I see mine, but I'm not prepared to talk.
Yeah,
about
it's. I mean, the
I'm
first
talk
thing
about
I
it down here under schedule, probably.
Sure. With the new Parks Advisory Board being established, of course, you know, the things that we want to do is, of course, we've elected our board, which is I truly appreciate. So thank you for stepping up and doing that. And then the guidelines and roles that is in the the manual there under Park Advisory Board members. Member info, and so you can read up on the guiding principles there. And then, of course, the mission statement. It's good to have a mission statement that really truly defines what this board wants to accomplish as a whole. And with that, we do have some examples if you need to go off of those. But it'd be nice if we could take a look and work through probably collectively an idea of what you'd like to see as a mission statement for this board. Obviously, our first and most important task of this year is to work on our comprehensive parks plan, and so that might be a part of that. But what we intend to do, you know, as a board, you know, to work in the benefit of parks and of the community. So, do we have some of those examples that we can provide you? I don't think you need to necessarily come up with something from scratch. So we did provide some examples. They came in from different areas. And so I would be nice if you could all focus in and just kind of work together collaboratively, come up with a mission statement that you think will best fit our role here.
Why don't we do that with a workshop that we're going to propose?
And have the examples beforehand. That way we can come to the workshop with a rough draft of what you might want to see in it, even if it's just one sentence
or
a word, and then we can all pull it
right now.
A key word. Yeah.
Are they ready?
I do. Yeah.
Oh well, let's hand them around.
I do.
Now.
There you go.
We'll hand these around now, but
like
we will talk about
the kids have gone to bed.
That's why.
You know,
especially on a Friday.
Yeah.
Okay, I apologize. I was blanked this one. Okay.
You were too excited about getting a secretary.
Yeah. And it was so easy.
Thank you, Ann, for stepping up. I appreciate that.
Yes. See, so these are going to owe you from now on. Yeah. You did it on purpose.
So we'll set this aside, and we'll talk a little bit about this later in the meeting, but then I want you to keep it handy. I also just turned the page here and noticed that there's, within the handouts of today, there is a class, a parks classification on your second page here. That's something that, why I was just mentioning, there's a distinct definition of each of these classifications of parks. So we'll talk to that, but this is a good example. If I turned the page, I would have been able to answer that quicker for you.
Yeah, my only comment was, is if we change a classification, what's the process?
Right.
Yeah, I realize there's classification. Yeah. I just don't know. There's usually a process to change that stuff.
If, as I would refer, and you can correct me, Jeff, if I'm wrong, but it's considered similar to changing a zoning on land use.
Yeah, it would. The process would mirror that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good enough.
Yeah, okay. That's enough for this. Okay, we'll go into. That was unfinished. Did you have anything you wanted to talk about with Schaefer?
Actually, I think I've got that coming up after.
Coming up later.
Yes.
Okay. So let's move into the comprehensive planning process, and we're going to turn that back over to Jeff.
As Kelly mentioned a little bit earlier, we're going to set up a separate workshop to talk about the comp planning process, and I think we're going to do that in a couple weeks. One of the things we needed to get settled first was, of course, the mission statement, which we just handed out those examples, and we're going to work on finishing the mission statement. And the first thing we're going to look at doing are the goals and policies.
Goals and objectives.
Goals and objectives.
Policies can be spun off of objectives.
Mm-hmm. And I will have a couple of examples of that. You have the examples of the mission statement, and we'll get your examples of the objectives, kind of the things that follow along. What we're looking for is statements that will implement the goals that we choose, and we'll get that meeting set up enough for where on the agenda we're going to schedule that meeting.
Let's talk about that for a minute right now. I was thinking you'd do chapter 1 and 2 first, but okay. Let's just go ahead. What this commission, the one task that really ought to be our task is to develop a good, solid goals and objective for the comprehensive plan advisory to commissioners. So we've got so many things on our plate with this agenda. My proposal is that we block out a 3 or 4 hour period sometime in the next month, and we actually do nothing but talk about the goals and objectives of the comp plan from our point of view. Now, the goals and objectives shouldn't be more than a page long. But one of the things I would like to have everybody do, just so that I've been through this process of doing this maybe 20 times in my life, and it's a lot of work, even though it sounds simple. Every word counts in an objective statement and in goal. So I would like each of you to go home, and before we schedule it, I mean, we'll schedule the meeting today, hopefully, but understand the difference between a goal and an objective. That it trips me up every time. I start talking goals and I end up in objectives. So if we all are on the same page about understanding what that is, what we're talking about when we talk about a goal and an objective, we'll move fast through that process. So what my hope is that sometime, and I would like to think around the 15th of October, we can set aside a special meeting, not within this meeting period.
That's a Wednesday.
A Wednesday, okay. 4 hours, evening, afternoon will be the choice of this group to sit down and just focus in on just those elements of the comp plan and our input. Then we'll take that and give that to Jeff. He will take it through the system because, as you all know, our role is advisory to the commissioners. And And so when it's done and said, we will have major input into this comp plan, and we'll own this from that standpoint. So if we could do that in a setting where we can just really get into it and be not talking about anything else but what it means to develop this comp plan, goals and objectives. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
And then anybody want to make some suggestions about a time and a place for something like that?
Well, it would work best for me if it's while the kids are in school, obviously.
I'll be available anytime you need it.
Do we have to follow the same public notice and all that kind of stuff?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
I guess
yes.
We do because
yes.
The majority of us will be
yeah.
there. Yes.
Open meeting. Open meetings.
So you're going to have to give it enough time, whatever that is.
Well, then that's
2 weeks.
Isn't it
2 weeks? 2 weeks notice.
So,
15th
well, it's actually a little bit closer to 3 because now that we're using exclusively the reflector for our public notices.
Oh.
They're they only for last week, so
yes.
We have to.
Okay. Okay.
So October.
But we have the time,
yes.
and I did suggest around the 15th of October, day before, day after, a couple days after, whatever.
Dan, do you have access to the room schedules, so you know if there's a.
I do.
We can,
reason why we
can typically Luke Jensen Sports Complex, the upstairs conference room is typically available.
I think that
available.
Would be a very motivating
and
room.
In Bud's
our
room?
Our advisory board's going to be there. The Bud's in the community room. Yes.
Yeah,
there
it's
we go.
Nice.
Yes, we will have we have a projector set up.
Okay.
We should be fairly well set up.
Yeah.
We're talking about 15th.
That was my suggestion, but I'm throwing it out there to... I see some nodding of the heads, yes, in our consultant here. How about Jennifer, are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I have a board meeting at 7:30 on that morning and another team lead meeting at 9, so after 10 would be ideal.
10 to 2 sounds like a good time frame.
10 to 2 on the 15th?
I don't know. I'm asking.
Fine. Sounds good.
I do like that date. I think that would work.
That sounds great. And this is fun to have it at the Luke Jensen Sports Complex.
I think that's a great idea. Now, we will be having a meeting on the 10th, so we'll have a meeting before that, which will give us an opportunity to get anything we want out into
yes.
it. But the 14th, we will exclusively deal with this one issue.
I thought it was 15th.
50th, excuse me.
Okay.
On the 10th is the parts,
yeah.
next
okay.
part.
Yeah.
So,
bring your lunch.
Yeah, bag lunch.
Brown bag.
What are you serving?
Who's ordering pizza?
Sorry, I can't eat it anyway.
So, we'll get notices out to you to remind you on that as part of the packet that'll come out for the next agenda.
Yeah, remind them about.
And, Jeff, if you need to. Share anything with us prior to that, please feel free to do that.
Absolutely.
But I do want to stay focused on just those two items.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, 3 items. We've added the mission statement to that.
Yeah. Anything, any other examples, I'll get out to you so you kind of have an idea of what the difference is between a goal and an objective and make sure we're following along that timeline.
Right.
I'd be happy to do that.
The other thing you might want to include, Jeff, is if the county has guiding principles for all departments
yes.
and for the county overall, have that as your higher level so that you're following.
Filter those down
yes,
through
you're following.
That's a very good point. I forgot that point. But that is really something important. And that's why I think our planning is going to be, it's going to have a leg up on other planning process because really you're understanding the bigger comprehensive plan for the county. I think we're going to fit in there nicely because of your...
I'm going to start blushing.
Okay, well, that's... we got to look at positive things here. Okay. Okay, now you're back to Chapter 1. You want to go through...
Basically what I did is, and I made a mistake by numbering these chapters, chapter 1 and 2, they're just the first 2 chapters I put out, and they're more background information and structure than they are substantive information, and they're by no means settled. I certainly want your input on everything that's all the written stuff that's in those 2 chapters. but there's some things in there, background information, when we did our first comp plan, when the first Parks Department was, first Parks comp plan was created and things like that. I'm not sure if everybody's had a chance to look over those two chapters yet. I know that Kelly and Barbara received copies on it, and if everybody else has or not, basically, like I said, there's a basic structure that's in those two chapters. There's certainly things can be moved around, changed, phrasing can be changed.
I don't have my binder, so I thought maybe I was missing.
I was expecting to see it in this packet, but it's not there.
Okay. So basically what we'll do then is I'll ensure that everybody gets a copy of those two very draft outlines of what we're doing, and either at our next meeting on the 10th or on the 15th, whichever one, because this is going to be comprehensive plan related, we can discuss those.
Well, definitely before the 15th, because it's always good to have an opportunity to go through it.
Okay.
Before we get there.
And I'll
otherwise,
sure
you take the first half hour to read it.
Sure. Yeah. No. I'll make sure that those two are available to you by Monday. I can send them to Monday of next week. I can send them to Leanne, and can email those out.
That'd be perfect.
Okay.
I'd like to ask us to email out to you and for you to copy, or to put it on paper. Is that a hardship for anybody?
I just don't have to have a printer right now.
I
went up
to the library and do it.
Yeah.
First
10
pages a day is free.
We'll try to bring as many documents.
You can use all your kids' different cards, and you've got like 40 copies there.
Anytime you need a paper copy of something, I email to you, just respond and let me know, and I'll bring that.
The difficulty I have with this, and this has nothing to do with you guys, it just has to do with past experiences. I do not appreciate coming to a meeting and being asked to approve something or disapprove something or whatever without having had a chance to clearly investigate the information. Mm-hmm. So to try to discuss this stuff, which I realize you know that now, without having ever seen it, it just isn't going to be my cup of tea.
Well, that's why he said he'd get it out to us before the meeting on the 15th.
I just want to make sure he understands that. Mm-hmm. I feel really strongly about that.
I think we all do.
I read too slow. We dealt with that before, and I don't want to deal with that.
It's need to do with my eyes or age or something.
The first read, and then we're not going to adopt anything.
I used to read fast.
At this meeting, I want to make sure everybody gets it and has ample time to look at it before they make any decisions. Okay. And this is part of an overall document that the finalized document is scheduled to be completed early next summer or late spring, early summer of next year. So there's going to be more than enough time for everybody to take a look at everything.
And within the first of the two documents you gave us the other day, it talks about vision, goals, and objectives. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going to focus in on. Now, I want to correct my statement for this workshop. It'll be the mission statement, it'll be the vision, goals, and objectives. Yep. So it'll be those four items. Mm-hmm. Vision, mission, goals, and objectives.
Great.
Okay. I will add one thing that I'll suggest to those of you who don't mind doing a lot of reading or background for this, and if you're new to this whole Parks Comprehensive Planning process, you may want to look at the comprehensive plan that currently guides the department as much by default as anything that was approved in 2007, even though it does reflect the two jurisdictions when they were joined. Because what you're doing is an update to that rather than trying to reinvent the wheel. And of course, you can reinvent anything you want, but it's really good background if you're not familiar with this process to make sure, as Kelly said, that you don't miss something that you really wanted to have stated there, so that when you go apply for grants or you go to get something approved like your capital facilities plan or your budget, you didn't miss something that you really wanted to have there that reinforces and backs up whatever you're going for in terms of projects. So I'm going to take you through inventory today. We are not going to go through and read every one of these. This is in your packet. This is updated as a separation from Vancouver Parks and Recreation, now being Vancouver Parks and Recreation and Clark County Parks, Trails, and
whatever else they take care of, special facilities, et cetera, Clark County Parks. My name's Jean Akers. I'm a landscape architect and a park planner and wear a lot of different hats, and I used to work for both county and city and now do private consulting. I do look familiar. I might sound familiar, and thank you all for putting up with that sound. Jeremy, could you open that one up? And just open it and go to the second slide there. We'll just see the first slide. Yeah, let's do the full screen. So one of the important things, do you care if I stay seated, move, get up, do whatever
yes,
you want?
Kind
of like Butch Cassidy. And I might have to stand every so often. I did a quick summary, that's also in your packet, of these standards and classifications so that you understand what are we talking about? What's a classification?
Good.
That's not something everybody kind of gets. It does not answer the question of what's the significance of if it's a neighborhood park and we want to change the name. That's a different piece. But this at least gives you the vocabulary and the structure of the existing system, even though it's now, you know, jurisdictionally separated. And as we go through the inventory and we start creeping up on what the standards are, adopted standards and level of service, which is important when you get into park impact fees. Anytime you're charging fees, you have to be able to say what's your standard, what's your level of service, what's this impact going to be, and how can you charge new development for it. All these things become very important, and they all kind of trickle down, and they're interrelated. So it helps to know some of these things. So that's there just as a reference for you. What's a classification? If you turn that page and then look, what's a standard? The standard basically is trying to quantify what do we think we need for our system? How many acres? Based on our population. There's a quantitative standard. And that's what the Park Impact Fee Program is based on. And as we lead through this comprehensive plan, because we're separating some of those impact fees that are currently shared, we may want to look at, is there a better way that these things are structured, and if the boundaries are, how much should they be realigned? Because, you know, things are changing. So, but they're based on these standards, and something you can do in the comprehensive plan is determine whether or not it makes sense to change a standard. But you want to be really thoughtful as soon as you start changing things that are quantitative, because that's going to affect your impact fees and everything else, and there's a whole lot of sort of technical background to it. But at least I wanted you to have this, so it's a little bit of a primer. This is in the old comp plan, or the current comp plan that's now currently being adopted. I just cleaned it up so there was less reference to the city for you, but it's there. And as I said before, that's a good background document if you don't mind reading stuff. It's available as PDFs, and I think you have links. I don't think you have it printed up in your binder as a separate document, but just so you know. Okay, so starting with this whole idea of inventory, we have these different classifications and standards. The classifications say it's a neighborhood park, it's a special facility, it's a community park. It may give you these different names for the different lands and what their purpose is. Then we have level of service, which comes out of those standards that say we should have so many acres per 1,000 people. For neighborhood parks, we should have 2 acres per 1,000. And this is in the urban area only for neighborhood parks. Community parks are also considered an urban park, and that's 3 acres per 1,000. And because of the trend we've seen over the last 7-8 years, it's very fuzzy saying neighborhood park and community park, as you've already discussed today. Where's the line? How is it different? The classification gives you a general guideline. It is not in stone. Generally, community parks are 20 to 100 acres, generally. Generally, regional parks are 50 to several hundred acres. Generally, neighborhood parks are 2 to 6 or 2 to 5 acres. But it changes. I'm not sure how many acres Phillida was. I think it's just under 20. So it's a small community park as a community park. So community parks can vary. What we found is because there's been a whole lot of growth since the early 2000s, it's very difficult to create a new community park that fits that classification, that guideline. It's hard to buy 20 acres and have it all next to each other. So urban park is a better way of thinking in terms of the standard is 5 acres per 1,000. So neighborhood park, community park, sometimes their characteristics mesh a little bit. But in general, for the whole urban unincorporated area, the standard, if you combined the neighborhood and the community, is 5 acres per thousand. Then there's a 1 acre per thousand for urban natural area, which generally is kind of natural open space, might have a trail in it, it might have access to other trails, but it's specifically in the urban area, and then regional natural areas can be in the urban area, but they're out all over the place, and then regional parks. 10 acres per thousand is the standard for a regional park. So as our population grows, you need more acreage. Now, that can be really significant when you're looking at the park impact fees. If you're looking at a 20-year plan or a 6-year plan, those impact fees, it's hard because you collect the impact fees that help you buy the land after the land has been sold, and they're paying for those residential occupancies. So a building permit basically is when you collect impact fees. So you're getting money after growth has happened. So park systems are always a little behind when most of their acquisitions happen because of impact fees. But if you have all the land that you said you needed, then you don't really have the justification to charge more impact fees. And the county may come to that point where we've got them all. So every time we do an update, we measure what's your level of service. Do you have you met the standard that you said you needed for the population?
And you're talking about population, not number of homes, correct?
No, population.
Population.
Not
dwelling
units.
So if you have an average of 2.3 people per home, then mm-hmm. you could pretty much, you just count the homes and say that's how many. So a 250-home development would generate about 1,000.
Yeah.
That would need a park. Is that what you're saying?
Well, not exactly, because we'll go by the census rather than number of homes.
Okay. Census.
In the estimates for population, it's not that direct.
Okay.
You could make an estimate like that, like you would for a school, like, oh, we need an elementary school, for these 200 homes. But it's not quite that
Okay.
And we're always behind. So we'll move into level of service after we go through goals and objectives, but some of this quick overview that I'm going to give you is going to kind of start stirring stuff up, maybe light some light bulbs in terms of what does all this mean and why do I care how many parks are in each park district and that sort of thing. So the level of service tells you, whoops, we haven't quite met our standard. Here's this wonderful, somewhat idealistic, but also it's a national standard.
Let's clarify that for just a second.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to develop our standard.
Yes.
We have a national standard.
Yes.
We also have sort of a state standard.
Mm-hmm.
RCO does this standard what they think is appropriate for all this. And if this county feels lush, they might have a higher standard. If they feel pretty tight, they might have a lower standard. So that's something that the comprehensive plan does. So
I
just wanted to.
No, that's fine. That's good.
That's the point where we can make changes.
That's where
that's where you can make strategic policy changes. Yes. Yes. So you have these standards. You have your current level of service. What you've got a target. What's your ideal? What's your vision? The interconnected system of parks, trails, open space. And then in the comprehensive plan, you talk about the needs and demands. Very clearly, we need more parks in District 5, PIF District 5, as it is currently. We don't need as much based on the levels of service in District 9, not to pick on Salida, but that's, it's got a lot. It's pretty flush. It's got more community parks than anybody else and developed parks than anybody else. So you look at these things and try to be as objective as you can. And that target then sets up what should be on your capital facilities plan. What are the first priorities? Those in the first couple years, the ones that clearly have deficits that are stronger should be there. Now, things move, things are flexible, none of this is chiseled in stone, but that's sort of the process that we move through to figure all this out and why it's important. If it's on your capital facilities plan and it was very clearly a need in your comprehensive plan, then and it's in your budget, but maybe not enough in your budget, then when you go to RCO or some other granting agency, you can set all that up and say, it's really justified for you guys to give us the leverage to do this because look how the community supported it, how our budget is trying to get there, and how it's in our capital facilities plan. So it's all this, it's a like a domino effect almost. But
we might take a moment and just tell them what RCO is.
Recreation Conservation Office. Okay. That is the state granting office for both state and federal funds that include the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is about to expire after 50 years. If you have any desire to be politically lobbying, you might want to encourage that it gets reenacted in 2015. That's offshore oil drilling. It's a tax on that to fund recreation and conservation in the country. And it's been huge in terms of enabling local and state entities to have conservation lands and parks, parks
and
jails.
It's unusual for us to build a park without having spent half of the money from
some,
the state.
Some amount of leverage from outside.
The feds funnel it through the state, so we don't get direct dollars from the federal government.
Right.
We get it from RCO, which is the state, and we will be doing grants where we'll be visiting Olympia a lot. And that's going to be one of our jobs, is to go with staff to make these things happen, because that's the element.
That's one of the reasons, other than just good planning, and since I'm a planner, of course everybody should do good planning, but not everybody agrees that we want to plan anything. That's one of the reasons why you do your comp plan update, because RCO won't even look at you if you don't have a current one. And
we
if they say it's older than, you know, 6 years, yeah, then it's not current, and they're not gonna, you're not gonna be eligible for any of that money. So, okay, let's click to the next one. Thanks, Jeremy. So I put together now the revised inventory that basically says the overall city of Vancouver and its urban growth area are no longer collaborative, working together in those 10 PIF districts. And you do have, I hope, in your binders, the map of 10 PIF districts. So if you sort of understand what that is.
Mm-hmm.
That's now being separated, city and county, or is separated, sort of city and county. It's not, the PIF program isn't administered differently. That means PIF is park impact fee. Sorry if I keep going back to those. So we have basically looked at what's there now that is currently of the county in that urban growth area, or what I'll call the urban unincorporated area. And you have now in front of you this inventory.
Which I have to tell you, I have to step in for a moment.
Yeah.
One of the first things I did when I came on the original commission was to ask for an inventory of the parks. They didn't have one. So I was given a book. What's her name? I can't think of her name. Linda Clinton happened to have a book that had the parks all listed in it, but no differentiation made between county, city, whatever, whatever kind
okay.
of park. So I'm thrilled just to see
Woo,
this
score. Document. Okay, great.
Way to go, Jean.
But let me also say that it doesn't exactly match what the city of Vancouver says the urban unincorporated parks are, or the, and I'll explain why, or the regional parks are.
Okay.
We went through it with a fine-tooth comb to say, well, yes, we have that park, but half of that park is not developed. So we may have separated and said it's undeveloped acreage. Or we may have gone through some of the regional parks and said, well, that acreage doesn't quite work. So we've reassigned a few things. And one example was in Hawkinson Meadows Community Park, which the overall land is 240 acres. 80 of it is developed into ball fields. 40 of it is a community park, and then that other 120 is totally undeveloped. So we moved numbers around to reflect that accuracy. So that means that, and here's the significance, if we just call something sports fields and it's a special facility, it's not, it doesn't count as acreage that meets our standard that justifies charging PIF fees or that creates a deficit in a district, in a park impact fee district. I'll get you there in a minute. If of all of the 120 acres that were sort of went through that development during the Greater Clark Parks District, if all that 120 acres were counted as community park, District 6 and the adjoining districts that are close to Hawkinson Meadows Park would not need any more community park. You met your standard, you're done. If we only count the park, the part of that park, the acreage of that park, that actually is the community park, it has the trails, it has the play area, it has the open lawn area, but the sports fields are really counted more as special facility sports facility, because it really is. I mean, it's booked that way. It's not just, hey, come on, like Hazelbell and just play or whatever. It's booked that way, and it's programmed sports complex. So we're counting it that way. So that 40 acres are in community park, and that's on our level of service, and that counts when you're starting to say, have we met our standard or not? And the special facilities are not, because we don't charge PIF for special facilities. Now, as we go through a couple of these examples, this will make sense to you. why we shuffled a few things. So if you're looking at this really closely, maybe you're not sleeping well or something and you want to look at this really closely. Otherwise, it's a reference, and I'll just tell you, between now and the end, if you find anything, please let us know. This is our first flush of trying to make sure it's aligned the way we perceive the county currently has a, you know, its parks, trails, and open spaces. So,
well, I heard you say earlier that we include the schools because they're they operate like a, but we don't have all of them on here.
No, so we don't have all of them on there.
Especially we only have one of Evergreen's schools in here.
So,
and I know some, we do have some shared use agreements and some shared land components.
So that would be really useful. In Vancouver's process, they made a decision that we've just sort of accepted by default, and it's a good argument to bring up here. If the area where you have a joint use agreement or a park adjacent to the school, if that's open, not 24/7, but if that's open 7 days a week for people in the neighborhood to come, even when school's in session, it's counted as acreage for providing a neighborhood or a community park.
Okay.
If it's really not available during school, because it's so integrated with the schools, even if there was a use agreement for building it, but it's so integrated with the school system that you can't use it during the school day, during school hours, mm-hmm. if you're a family with toddlers or whatever, then it wasn't being counted as acreage to meet a neighborhood park need. So I think that's a really good point to bring out and say, okay, what are these use agreements? Because we haven't gone to that level yet. Yeah. What were all the different use agreements and all the different schools and what's available, you know, 7 days a week, all during the day.
Yeah, I think that's the trick, really, and that's the question. Is I look at this and it says Sarah J. Anderson, and we don't allow anyone on the property during the school time hours, and so that was kind of throwing me off. Versus like Geyser Middle School, it is adjacent to, and in addition down the hill, and people are down there constantly.
So we want it to be realistic, and we want it to reflect that reality and that level of public access. So anywhere that we're missing something that does have that access, we certainly want to put that in there. But if we listed something here under school ownership that you can't use, we probably want to change it. Because, again, this all affects what's your current level of service in your inventory. Should it be on there? And we want to be as accurate as possible.
Right.
So that would be a good one to look at. And to be perfectly honest, at this point, we didn't go through all the different use agreements or degrees of public access because we're trying to move quickly and get something that's our starting point.
But that's a point you will continue.
That
brings up a question in my mind. I know we have representation from Vancouver School District, Evergreen School District, but we have several other school districts within our privy here that we need to... make sure we're covering in terms of...
We extended the invitation?
That I don't know. That's why I'm bringing it up right now.
You know what? I thought we did extend, but you know, primarily, in years past, it's been primarily, you know, Evergreen and Vancouver. Obviously, you know, there's several other school districts out there. We could reach out to them and see if they want to be...
For sure, probably Battleground should be that.
The challenge with the smaller school districts is staff to get here.
Yeah, but Battleground has come quite a ways into...
Battleground is at WSU campus.
See?
They are the WSU campus is Battleground. So that's where they kind of start.
Yeah.
And then Ridgefield is just like on the other side of the street in that sort of half corner and come go up. So there.
Anyway, I know... We're going to need that information from them. We have two districts here. Four is going to be a lot of people coming from different school districts, but I do want to make sure we're somehow communicating with all the districts within the park, within
Clark
our
County,
jurisdiction.
And I know we have talked about that, and we've identified all the different school districts, and I think... If memory serves me right, I think we did extend an invitation out to all the different districts, but... I don't know if we're actually emailing right now or not. I don't think that we are.
Well, we probably need at least a sheet of a map that shows the various school districts and how they relate to our system.
Especially during this
at least we know that.
At least, especially during this planning process.
I mean,
if I was in Battleground and found out you were doing all these wonderful things and not even talking to me, might be a little upset about that.
Well, they might be calling Adam and picking on him if he...
But where we found that working with these two school districts has been beneficial to both.
Oh, it's been amazing.
I think we need to make sure that invitation goes out.
That's great.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to just pull that into the...
Just clarify, when you're talking about some of these land use agreements, they can change too, right? Meaning that...
Some of them have terms as well. Like, they might have a term period of 25 years or 5 years.
Or a school that gets developed says, you know, hey, look, we're open to the public. You can come play after school hours. But then because of liability reasons, probably retracted that.
It's happened.
Okay.
It's happened.
Yeah, the idea is to almost create an Excel spreadsheet, say on and off. Do you allow the public, general public, to come onto your property or the premises? And that's basically what we're saying. Yeah.
There's a whole inventory of agreements that affect parks, of school agreements that was part of BCPRD that maybe you need to get that from Vancouver. I don't know if Julie would have it or Monica would have it. But
Julie has an updated one.
Okay. And if any of those are in the urban unincorporated area, like Eisenhower or wherever, then it would be a good idea to have that in your hands. Okay. All right, so let's flip to the next one, Jeremy. So I'm not going through each and every one of these, but I'll give you a summary of what we think we have right now in terms of inventory. 44 neighborhood parks. Okay. It's just what I've counted. You can always blame the consultant. Okay?
Yeah.
Don't blame Clark County Park. Yeah. 44 neighborhood parks, over 200 acres. 12 community parks, 361 acres. 10 urban natural areas, 236 acres. Now, there are regional natural areas within the urban unincorporated area, and it's kind of a funny game to decide what's a regional system like Salmon Creek Greenway, and how is that attributed as opposed to urban natural area? And that's something that we're trying to make sure it's as accurate as it can be, and it reflects the intent, and maybe it was a reason for the purchase or where the funds came from purchasing it. So that's part of this adjustment. And then we have regional parks, 13 different regional parks at 2,600 acres. The regional natural areas and the special facilities are part of the inventory, but they're not part of the measure of level of service. And there is no standard that says we have to have X number of boat launches or X number of sports fields, although there's a demand and a need that you adjust to for numbers of sports fields. So I haven't summarized those yet. We're really aiming more towards, okay, what are those standards, those levels of service, how does that affect how the PIF districts are, because that seems to be the most immediate thing to deal with, at least in this comp plan process. There's a dividing line now, and it's not where it was before, and we need to make some adjustments. So far, that's the inventory summary. Okay.
So I noticed
go back. Sorry.
I noticed you have within that your trails are put down there with sports fields. We do have measured and designated trails.
Yes, definitely.
Can we pull that up and have that as a regional trail system or?
Miles of trails would be a very good idea. Okay. Sure, absolutely. Because I just haven't counted them all.
Yeah, okay. You will go there.
Oh, yeah.
Just a matter of time.
Yes. Now, here's the other thing, just to clarify, is that there is an adopted 2006 regional trails and bikeways, I've forgotten the name of it, the system plan. It doesn't have an expiration date on it because it's not your park recreation and open space plan. So we adopt that by reference and reassert it, and in the capital facilities plan, if there were recommendations in that trails plan that doesn't have an expiration date, we reassert them in our capital facilities plan to say, hey, we need to continue Salachie, or we need to continue the Salmon Creek Trail, or whatever, or build the Cougar Creek Trail. But this is not a whole new trails plan.
And the trails plan was done in 2006. Yeah. Was the first one done. It was 20 years between. So you don't need to do... Yeah.
Not that much has changed.
Intensive plan on trails as often as you do.
But we want to reinforce and get it on and get
so
it in the budget.
So we really ought to make it available to you, the copy of that trails plan. It's pretty inclusive.
Okay. And since the 2007 comprehensive plan, There's been an additional 31 acres of neighborhood parks, an additional 20 acres of community park, an additional 40 acres of urban natural area, 15 more acres of special facility, and over 300 acres of park development since the 2007 plan. So there's been a significant amount of growth and development, and that's the value of the update is to say, let's make sure that's all credited in our inventory, it's counted in our level of service, etc.
Did you have that on a slide? Or
I didn't,
you?
No.
Okay, that was
good information. I added that this morning, sorry. And all this information will go, each time we do a draft, this information will all be summarized, so you'll have it. And I'm just trying to, I'm letting you know where we are in the process.
Say those one more time, because that was a fascinating numbers.
Okay, so since the last comp plan, this update, basically it will be adding in the urban unincorporated area 31.54 acres of neighborhood park, 20.08 acres of community park, 40 acres of urban natural area, 14.87 acres of special facility. And your development, it's over 306 acres of development. So land was acquired, land that was already acquired, both of them have, you know, there's been a significant amount of development.
And no regional parks?
There's been development within regional parks,
but that's
not what I'm counting.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, this was just the urban unincorporated, urban park system. Okay, excellent.
And so this was, you're referring to the change that's happened.
Yes, and why you need an update.
With this change happened in 2006?
The last one was adopted in May, I think, or April of 2007, but it was really all done during 2006. So all that inventory was in 2006, so 2007, 2008, 2009.
Okay, what came right after the 2008 on community?
Urban natural area.
Thank you.
So it's how the system changed. Okay. There's been a lot of growth. There's been a lot of development. The maintenance and operation levy was a huge trigger to allow a flow of 25 new parks, new sports fields, some new trail, et cetera. So there's still more to do on that, but that was a huge kick for the system to try to catch up to some of that growth that's been happening over the last decade or two. Okay, so this is just sort of a restatement of kind of what I've already told you in a way, that when we move through this, we have a classification that we base our system on, and in that classification there's a standard for acquisition, like how many acres should you have? If you don't have that, you need X number of acres, that tells you what you need to go acquire. So that's called the acquisition standard. Then the development standard is how many acres should be developed for your population. That's a different number from total acres. So the total acres in the urban area is 6 acres per 1,000. The total acres that should be developed with parks and playgrounds and mown lawn and whatever is 4.25. And that's split between neighborhood and community park. So it's 2 acres. So neighborhood park is supposedly just, it's a developed park. You don't have sections of neighborhood parks that are technically classified as undeveloped. Once the neighborhood park is developed, all its acreage counts. We don't subdivide the parcels and the properties in the classification system. So it gets pretty hairy if you're splitting hairs like that. So there's a development standard and there's an acquisition standard, and I'll show those to you on the next slide. But then there's a degree of development. If only half of the site is developed, like at Hawkinson Meadows, you don't want to count it, the whole acreage, as meeting your development standard, because you just shot yourself in the foot. So you have to figure out, is it developed, is it undeveloped? On your inventory, it will tell you what's your current acreage, what's undeveloped, what's developed, what's the total acreage. Okay, and that's why we have those two things, because there's different standards. All right, and then we're trying to meet level of service. That's what, when we say LOS, or level of service, it's not laugh out loud or laugh and be sad or some one of those things you put in your text on your phone. Level of service is really the justification for the need for more facilities or a measure of performance that says you've met it. You set this standard and now you're there. You know, so that's a lot of what the planning means. Okay, thanks, Jeremy. Thank you, Jeremy, by the way, for being my Vanna White there. Okay. These are the acquisition standards. Acquisition standard basically means how many acres should we have in a quantified standard for our park system. Okay. It doesn't say anything about what should we acquire. Should it be wetland? Should it be floodplain? Or should it be developable land? It doesn't. I'm just so when you actually develop acquisition criteria and you implement your acquisitions, that's a whole other set of guidelines and policy and what have you. So that's, I just want to separate that for you. So you have urban parks, the total is 6 acres per thousand. Regional parks, the total is 10 acres per thousand. That's the current adopted standard. That's pretty close to what the national standards say. There's a slight differentiation because I think the national standard says 6 acres per thousand for just parks per thousand for cities, but we've separated those out between neighborhood park, community park, and the urban open space or the urban because that serves as kind of a green space, breathing lung, that sort of thing. So it's a slight deviation from the national standard. Okay. Then the development standard for urban parks, 4.25 acres per thousand. And in regional parks, it's more a percentage of that regional park. So how much of the regional park is developed so that people can get in and use it? So that there are trails they can ride their bikes through or walk through. There's beach access. There's a boat launch. There's sports field. There's sport courts. There's stuff, picnic shelter, stuff to do to accommodate people.
Parking lots.
Yep, you got to get there, restrooms, and all of that. The developed portion of regional parks is usually 18% of the site. And that's a level of service. Now, there's no impact fee for regional parks. I don't see one coming soon, but you know, if you wanted one, you could think about there's a development standard and there's a level of service. So something we measure up against. Okay, let's hit the next one. All right. Then, we got to get that in there. Did we skip one? Go back one. Nope. Okay, development land. Nope, go forward. Sorry. All right, back one. Now, I'm going to start getting dizzy. Okay.
Did we miss one? Is there one missing?
Oh, no, never mind. Sorry. Just go back one. I wrote a note on the side of mine. On this development standard, the other thing that you may notice if you read the current comp plan is there's also development levels. So level one, Bill was just talking about earlier, when you acquired Stewart property, it'll go through level one development. So PIF dollars are used to get those levels of development in. It's not considered a standard, but it is a category of level of development. So PIF 1 basically secures a site. You do the fencing, you clean it up, you meet health standards, decommission the leach field or whatever, that sort of thing. Make it safe, clean it up. Level 2 is you've added enough amenities that it serves as a park, and it's a developed park. Level 3 means you've not only added those amenities, you've added more embellishments of extra, you know, the picnic gazebo and the extra landscaping. And I would say a place like Pacific Park is to level 3. Whereas, now I have to think of another park. Oak Grove or, it's not Maple Grove. Hazeldale might be level 2. Because I don't know about Hazel. That's an old one.
Level 3, yeah. Basically, you've got shelters, restrooms, you know, parking lot. You're to that development stage, so yeah. It's level 3. Level 2 is more of a neighborhood park.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of advocated that we almost need another higher level.
There is actually a level 4.
Super high-profile parks like Luke Jensen Sports Complex, for instance.
Yeah.
That thing is kind of at its own level, you know, higher standard than the rest of our...
So Esther Short Park is an example of level 4, where it gets extra maintenance, it's got to be beautiful, the city's downtown looks on it, that's a level 4. Luke Jensen is a level 4. That's very. It requires very intense maintenance. So that's a whole different thing from our park types, classifications, etc. Okay, next one. Now I want to give you an example of what's to come. This is a draft. This is a level of service summary for District 6, where we look at the total number of acres of land we have, and then what was the level of service for acres per thousand. So then you look at the population and figure out, okay, if PIF District 6 has... Oh, wait a second. That's not my... I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong slide. jump. That's just a summary. Jump to the next slide. Sorry. This is the direction we're going in with 5th District 6. If 5th District 6, as it stands now, has over 20,000 people in it, and you need 5 acres of parks, but 6 acres of parks and natural area per 1,000, then you need to have 124 acres total.
Sheesh.
Okay.
A lot.
In the whole district. Well, the district is, it's a big district. There currently is 104 acres. So District 6 already has 104 acres. So it needs about 20 more, 19.6. Okay, so that's how that acquisition standard works. That justifies you that you can continue to charge PIF fees until you get that acreage. Okay, then the needed to meet the development standard, remember the development standard is 4.25 per 1,000. So you look at that and say, how many developed acres are in District 6? Well, not a lot. There's no community park that's developed yet. There's a few neighborhood parks. There's a big deficit of almost 60 acres. That's how this whole level of service, once you figure out your inventory and as finely as you can and look at that population, then you know what your level of service currently is. In a comp plan, you then look at, okay, 6 years from now and 20 years from now, what am I going to need in order to meet the estimated population growth? So there'll be 3 levels that we'll go to with level of service to do this analysis. So the first thing is say, what do you got now? How does it look? And part of what you may be looking at is saying, oh, gee, well, this district's really got a whole lot. This district has very little. If these lines change, how does that influence one over the other? If you put one that has a whole lot of really good developed parks and it's next to one that has very few, and then you say, you know what, let's put them all in one big one. Well, it allows you to get more, but the more could go anywhere in that bigger district, and it could all go to the one that already has a lot. So there's some stuff that goes with this that you want to just be cognizant of in terms of how you've met your level of service.
How did we get to so many residents and so many acres without it being developed? Don't you have to spend the money in the development component within 6 to 6 or 10 years or something?
Not the development component. You have to spend the money within the collected dollars.
Yeah, okay.
But you can allocate, is it buying land or is it developing?
Okay, so you get to choose that then. Okay. So we just bought a lot and didn't develop
In that particular district.
Correct.
It had some neighborhood parks, but it didn't. And actually in that particular district, it's kind of hard to pick on that one. There was a community park that was going to be developed in the greater Clark Parks District, but it's still owned by the city, so the county needs to get ownership. Yeah. And when the GCPD was stopped, then that was one of the parks that was held up. So it's kind of an odd district to pick on.
Okay. Yeah.
But
it just seems like
process.
It was a little out of proportion. I wondered how that works.
Yeah. Well, so the thing you need to know about is with all these 10 districts, every one is unique. Mm-hmm. So you want to think, okay. You know, can we marry two of these? Is it going to be a good relationship? Or because now we have a line that splits two of the shared ones, 5 and 7, where should they go? They're not going to be orphans by themselves. They need to be part of something. And what's the best? So that'll be part of the analysis we'll look at. Okay. 6 ways to Sunday.
That'll be exciting.
Yeah, it could be exciting.
It could be, yeah.
Could be very exciting. All right, so could we go back? The 2 slides. Sorry, Jeremy, I'm making a joke. Right there, okay. This is just a summary in terms of the overall system in the urban area. And if you'd like to, even though I would say this is still sort of a draft, if you want I can turn this into a PDF, and it can be shared with you guys since you sat through all this.
That would be very nice.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
In all fairness, yeah. If I were a little further ahead, I would have had this ready for you. You would have had handouts. But so in the urban area, for a population of 142,784, and I'm not sure how accurate that is, so Jeff has to confirm that. The county should have 856.7 acres, and we have 800. So still, we need over 50 acres in the urban area to meet that level of service standard, combining it between urban, natural area, community, neighborhood, park. Mm-hmm. So that's the sort of like big picture. The big picture. And then in the regional parks, if our population is 435,000, I think there's another 500 that should be on that. It all depends on whose numbers you pick. We should have basically a tenth of that, 4,350, and we have 2,600.
Ooh.
So, regional park license. Now, the other thing you can think about is that's regional parks that the county owns, that the county provides access to, and there's no fee to go use it. But there are state parks out there, and there's state forest out there, and there's other lands, but they're owned by other entities that control whether or not there's public access and to what degree and whether or not they charge fees. So that's some of the nuances you want to think about if you start messing around with changing a standard and saying, oh, we don't want to ever have to see that we need 4,350 acres, you know, to meet our standard. Well, if you take that away, it takes away your ability sometimes to justify expanding a system. And then you're assuming that a state park isn't going to be sold or state forest isn't going to be sold or something you don't have control over. So this is just the county-owned parks that the county maintains that they have control over. So
did this standard, did these numbers change pretty dramatically when the Great Divorce happened?
Not regional parks. It's always been just regional parks. So the answer to that is no.
Okay.
The numbers haven't changed at all.
And it was managed as a unified system.
And that's what I was wondering.
Yes.
The numbers are the same.
You add differently because now you have two different systems. So.
But regional parks were not touched.
Yeah.
Okay.
And regional parks can be in other cities.
With mom
so.
Or dad.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, just a sidebar in this, right. With two school districts sitting here, as you think about these districts, mm-hmm. then you got school districts that are laying in there, and a lot of people like to see a park adjacent to a school, mm-hmm. and the school districts are going through the same mm-hmm. process. They may do it a little differently and count households instead of mm-hmm. population or age groups instead of something, but the important thing of having all the districts here is they're going through this process too, and they're going after vacant lands as we are going after vacant lands. And in some cases, we can get together on these purchases, and we have done it in the
past. Well, I think that brings a good point as to if Battleground could come to the table.
Right.
They're a very expanding district.
Have you seen what's going on in Brush Prairie area?
Yeah, I mean, Evergreen's still growing too, but I mean, so Battleground's insane how much it's growing, and the land and where you put it relative to where their transportation needs to get, blah, blah, blah. I mean,
they're also asking for another 50 acres in their urban growth boundary.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
The overall county.
Yeah. I mean, Battleground is, that'd be a good player to ask to talk about parks.
So
yeah,
you can see where if we're doing a good job, we will plug into the school planning process as much as they will plug into the park planning process.
Where is it we're going to build my new regional center? Is that on one of these?
Your county regional, like Marshall?
Yeah.
Community center?
Regional community center.
I'd like to see one with sports fields, with pools. I'd like to see it all centrally located so that utilities and everything else are all handled under one head. I mean, you don't want to know my dream. That's my dream. You put it all in one place, and you give people access from all different areas, easy way to get into and out of.
Boy, she walked right into it.
So goals and dreams and everything else.
Let's call Kingsway. Let's call Kingsway and buy their property and their school.
There.
Oh, did I
say that? Okay, so I'll just sum up my part since I've got you guys thinking about lots of different things. All of this basically in this planning process sets up your goals and your dreams and, you know, tells you what you have and what your standard is, what you want to go meet. And for the comp plan process, one of those sort of culminating pieces, sort of like the period at the end of your sentence, is the capital facilities plan. That basically says over the next 6 to 20 years, these are the projects. And it identifies specific projects. It figures out what their budget is, who's going to pay it, where the funds come from, et cetera. So you want to be able to have enough concrete input in all this and set up your priorities enough to justify what should be in that capital facilities plan. Because then that guides Bill when he goes in front of the commissioners and in front of Heath and anybody else saying, this is what I need in my budget because this is what's in my capital facilities plan and here's the monies that are identified and, you know, help us build this system and keep up with
it. Sometimes the challenge is finding the money identified.
Yeah.
So that's the other part.
But now you have solved some of that problem with being able to use funds for maintenance as well as development. Is that right?
Well, if you take it from one, then you create your deficit in the other. So.
Okay. Any questions on any of that? Other than I'll shave it to a PDF and send it to Leanne, and she can send it out to you.
That'd be great.
I hope we don't feel like you're being hosed with a fire hose on this information. You did a good job of pulling it in.
You did a good job of summarizing it instead of being in a big handout. I appreciate that.
Well, I thought about going through every one of these and saying, this park is
love it.
Well, as I see our schedule and our timing, I think we can move on. You did a great job. I'm glad we had a little extra time on that. So we'll move into new business, and that puts Bill in the hot seat here again.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Well, as needs arise, usually through citizen requests or just departmental needs, we have to go through our policies and kind of brush them off and update them. And this is a policy that, as a new parks manager, I haven't been savvy to all these different policies that have been developed in years past. So we still rely on the Vancouver Park Parks policies that were implemented back then, and so we pull those forward, dust them off, take a look at them, and then we take a look to see if we really do need to implement them, do we need to update them. And the one that we're looking at today is the commemorative naming of parks and recreation facilities. I've had a couple requests that have come in, this year about renaming some parks, and I just heard one today. The Schaefer property is one, but Bratt Canyon Park is another one. And so so we definitely want some guidance as to how we go through that process, and the policy is a perfect tool or the vehicle for making that happen. So we took a look at the Vancouver Park Parks policy, and it actually reads very comprehensively. And what I want to do today is to pass this out, have you guys take a look at them, and maybe make some suggestions on if there's anything that might be glaringly wrong or missing in here. And I would like to have you respond back to me, maybe in the October meeting, and then we can finalize these policies. There's another policy that has recently come to our attention as well that we've had to update, and this is kind of an affiliation with the Parks Foundation, and that is the policy on donations, memorials, plaques, and tributes. We've been getting a lot of requests for memorial plaques, and currently as the policy stands, and the policy was created jointly between the City of Vancouver and Clark County, and we've got, a lot of you may know, we've got a bench donation policy and a table donation policy. And then at a couple of our sites, on the City of Vancouver side, Esther Short Park has got a brick, policy. And over here at Luke Jensen Sports Park, we have a paver donation of plaque area. And we want to expand that a little bit. And there's a lot of folks that live next to neighborhood parks, community parks, regional parks that are always calling us about wanting to have a memorial for a loved one or to make a statement of some sort. And right now, it's been very difficult to accommodate with planting a tree at Lewisville Park when there's really we get so many requests, and it's such a high maintenance item when there's no irrigation. Mm-hmm. And so the use of a park bench or the adoption of a park bench is $1,500. To buy a park bench with a plaque is $2,500. That is kind of out of the price range of most folks to accommodate. When it comes to picnic tables, that's right around $4,500. That's truly expensive. And so what we're thinking about doing is implementing pavers in all of our parks, neighborhood, community parks, and we can even consider regionals. The one thing that we were thinking about addressing is to implement that at Dogwood Park, and that is currently under construction right now. And Scott Brantley is here with us today. He's one of our project managers with the county, and he's been very invested with pretty much all things parks when it comes to development. And we'll go through some slides here in just a little bit to show you what Scott's been up to. So.
But it does come up about 250 bricks.
250 bricks over at Dogwood?
Yeah, from centerline to centerline for the area that we looked at the other day. So the contractors come back with the price that's been given to them.
Oh, perfect. Thank you, Scott.
To put those in.
And so this would be our first array into putting memorial pavers into a neighborhood park.
Could I recommend that you get in touch with the guys at CMAC and the Community Military Appreciation? They've done this on several occasions. They did it out at the new reserve center. They've done it at the VA hospital in the park area behind there where the helicopter is. They've done this before, and it might be helpful to you in
Should be passed a lot of that on to me, so I know it as well. The new reserve center what I just finished. We'll be dedicating that.
How would that be different than the pavers that we do already? Like at Phillida, there's a section of pavers that are out there. And
yes, the Phillida Neighborhood Association kind of manages those pavers out there. And over at Luke Jensen, the Salmon Creek Little League manages those pavers.
Okay.
And so in this case, this would probably be Parks Foundation that kind of manages overseas. So Sherry Martin with the Parks Foundation would kind of oversee that.
Very
so
nice.
The phone call would be channeled through Sherry. And the nice thing about the pavers is we'll try to keep the cost as low as possible. If we can sell a brick for $100, we will. We don't know what it's going to cost. It depends on how many bricks get marked at the same time. So there might be a minimum of, say, 12 to 24, which might limit our ability to going out and updating the bricks, to maybe once a year or twice a year. We'll allow that. So we just need to get a number in so it makes it reasonable.
Let me speak to that for just a moment, because it's important that we understand that we have a real strong relationship with the Parks Foundation. And Sherry is on this. She couldn't be here today,
right.
But she did apologize. She called me and said she couldn't be here, but she will. She's very supportive, and she will be here in future meetings. But the Parks Foundation is our arm of donations from the community to us, but it makes it legal for all the tax purposes for the money to go into their funds, and they handle them. That's a real good service for us. And we started that just a number of years ago, and and of course, they have several ways they can do it. They can designate funds for a certain project,
mm-hmm.
or they can put it into a fund that then they give scholarships out. And as you may have known, there was money given out this year. A lot you helped with the process of distributing the money this year. A lot went to Yakult this year. And a considerable amount went to the city of Vancouver. Clark County didn't get a lot. They got $20,000 this year, I believe.
Yeah, but we brought that person in, too, though. And
yeah,
we just ran it through the Parks Foundation so they could get the write-off.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the details of that. But the point is...
But we didn't get any that we just put our hand
We weren't in a position to ask, and we got to ask. But that's our arm of community giving. And we're going to have to depend more and more and more on that particular segment of society. We also have the Community Foundation that they tend to deal with even bigger lots of money than the Parks Foundation. So we have those two pots of money that it's almost the mechanism makes it possible for us to receive cash money into without us having to be accountants and bookkeepers and all that stuff. So it's a good thing. And they have various functions and fundraisers. This commission needs to be seen and visible with those groups as well. So I know that next week they're having their annual meeting at the Water Center. If you will be starting to get invitations, if you haven't already started getting invitations to various things. Whenever you can possibly join in on those, it'll pay off big time back to us, because that's our arm to the public for funding.
Yeah. So, but I want to reiterate and be real clear that we need to ask. It wasn't that they didn't want to give us the money.
Right.
It's that we had not placed a request.
It's just like writing a
book. Because I looked and I thought, why didn't we ask for anything?
Because I think we weren't in any position to do it.
Yeah, we know that. Yeah.
We've been in the middle of the great divorce with baby. I love that.
I know, but I still was there asking.
Adam, you had a question.
Yeah, so my background is working with nonprofits. So my question is it 100%? Are they giving what people 100% of what people have given?
Yeah.
And that's critical for me. Yeah. So whatever organization that we...
Well, they do have their expenses, and they are very low-key expenses. So there is a certain amount set aside to operate their system.
Right.
I mean, they are funded through their operation, not through us putting... We put some money to them, or used to. I don't know if we do anymore.
I don't think we have...
I know that from our neighborhood, that the amount that went in from people was funneled back at us. And it was just used as a...
As a pass. It was
Before we got our 501c3, our neighborhood then became a 501c3 in and of their own. But the two times that we used... them, so there was not a carrying charge, if that's what you were asking.
All that information is on the Park Foundation, so it is.
And they'll probably be recruiting from this commission members for their board, because the connection is as important as the school district, and that's why Sherry's on this commission as well. It's an important component of our outreach to the community. Anyway, I think I just wanted to make that clear. Next week, if anybody wants to join me and go to their annual meeting on Tuesday, they have to RSVP. Is it today? Is it a deadline, I suppose? I think it is today.
No, Sherry does an excellent job as the director over the Parks Foundation. And yes, people can designate where they want those funds to be utilized. And the same thing with these pavers. We can actually break it down for the monies to go back into the same park that where the money was generated, which I think is a great idea. And so there's a lot of options there. So.
And as we come up with other ideas, they're willing to listen to other ways of funding that we can use them for. So they've been, they're growing as we're growing.
Yes.
Okay, you're still on new business.
Next thing, wind-up transfer agreement between Clark County and the City of Vancouver. As we've talked about at our last Parks Advisory Board meeting, all of us were here, we still have some unfinished business from the divorce, if you call it. City of Vancouver is still in possession of all of our park impact fee monies, and we still need to get our hands on that, because we've got some active projects out there, and we need to fund those. And so it's been very difficult since the breakup between the two groups trying to finalize the business. So there was a wind-up agreement, is what it was called, to try to encompass all of the unfinished business between the city and the county. And one of those is the returning the PIF funds back to the county. And another one is the transfer of properties. There's a lot of properties that that should have been deeded many years ago that were incorporated into the city. Actually about 25, 30 properties. You know, some of them are city parks, some of them are down there on the old Evergreen Highway. Just properties that should have been deeded over to the city many years ago that didn't happen. So that's part of the transfer agreement, and vice versa, some properties that reside in the county that the city should own. Another part of that was the a part of the transfer was the Schaefer property, and that was the piece that we've been actively negotiating throughout the course of this year. This does have some history, where the city has wanted to take that property for let me think about this. This is they wanted to move Waterworks Park over to the Schaefer property as part of a grant conversion. And so they approached us earlier this year and offered us originally $750,000 for our share, the county share, of the original purchase of the property. Since then, we've actually provided them a counter proposal asking them for fair market value of the county share. County share of the original purchase was 58% of the purchase. And the 2014 agreement, or agreement, but appraisal this year came in much lower than what the purchase price was. The original purchase price was, let's see if I can find that.
$2.8 million,
and it came back at appraisal for 2014 at $1.886 million. The 58% county share of that is $1,093,880, and so that is what our proposal to the City of Vancouver is currently.
How much?
$1,093,880. What's that?
City thought they were going to get the
people. Well, what they're offering to us is what they had remaining in their PIF balance. That was the $750,000, and so coming back, it just made sense to make the original.
So that's a number that isn't on this sheet, is that right? Or
No, that was the original document I think I handed to you last time. The counter proposal that we sent out to them was, we just did this about a week and a half ago. And based on making sure that the residents of Clark County are made whole on this agreement, as if we were selling this to the private sector, we would definitely want fair market value.
Did you say the same thing? State that number again?
It's
1.93 million counter offer.
Yeah, it's almost $1.1 million. It's $1,093,880. So the Schaefer property is a part of that wind-up agreement that was drafted. It was drafted by the City of Vancouver, and I need to follow up with that. A couple of other property transfers were on here as well. And this is county property that initially was...
Let me give just a little bit more information on that. Just
okay, sure.
Just
we don't
from
have
the sheet.
That.
One of the reasons the city is seeing that property... is they're eliminating Waterworks Park, which is down just north of Clark College, right on 4th Plain there.
Yeah, what are they going to do with that?
Well, that is a water, that's number one water station. That's where we get the bulk of our water for this a lot of the area outside the city in the urban growth area. So the thinking is they're taking a park out of the system. They use state funds to develop that park. The state doesn't allow you to back off of development that they put money to without replacing it with like kind. So they Schaefer Park kind of fits in the center of the service area of the water service that Water Station 1 provides. So I forget the amount of population served by the water district there. That water station.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons they want to go outside the city because it's moving from a water station. It's a reach, but it's still what their logic is. And what was my other point to it? It's in the same PIF district. So basically we're keeping the money in that district number
yes.
7, right?
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong there. So it's in the district. They're using the money out of that district that was collected in the city side, which is the 42%.
So, Kelly, what are they going to do with the Waterworks Park that's there?
Waterworks Park is no longer going to be open to the public.
They'll
because
fence it
off. Of national security has said that water sources have to be protected further than we were protecting. We opened that up to the public years ago thinking, what can they hurt?
Mm-hmm.
But now they're saying our major water source, one of our major water sources for this community, we can't risk having the public in there taking...
So that skate park, the whole thing
park,
is going to go.
Everything's going to go.
Right. I understand there's a...
The rhododendron garden, it's a beautiful... The amphitheater, uh-huh. Everything is going away.
Well, that's not something Julie shares with
us. The water facility, yeah, will
city
be expanded.
Parks
yes.
and rec.
So it's a little bit of a step backwards, but at least they're trying to be fair about it and keep us whole in terms of
right.
service.
So there's a deed of right by the state, so there needs to be a grant transfer yeah. on that.
What,
so
interesting.
What are you doing about the districts that are shared?
Well, that's forthcoming. That's one thing that we need to talk about. The one thing we've, of course, we've had shared districts. You know, certain areas are shared, and one of the things that we talked about doing is resnapping the line between the city and the county. Because, quite honestly, sharing districts right now is very difficult to do on the county side. And so that'll come up in our future meetings that we talk about. The possible consolidation of some PIF districts and then readjusting the boundary line between the city and the county. So that will become...
Wait, what do you mean readjusting the city and county boundary line?
Well, you have shared districts right now, so...
We're
so
just talking parks, right?
Yes.
We're
yes.
not
yes.
saying...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
You
don't have
what?
Well,
I didn't know we were
one
annexing.
One of the things to keep in mind that is good and bad at the same time, I wish they hadn't done it, but they did it, was they kept very good track of what came into the city, and what, even though the parks was doing it, they have the records of what went for city and what went to county
yes.
in those districts. If I'd been doing it, I would have lumped it all so it couldn't have been pulled apart. So we couldn't have got a divorce, but that's me.
The question, and I could be totally out to lunch on this, but so regarding this piece of property, that could we, rather than saying, hey, we'll sell you this property. Could you do an exchange for another piece of property in that same area so the community still has something to, some park to visit? As opposed to just saying, you have no longer have the ability to come and play and hang out. We're totally distancing ourselves from you.
and well, exchanging it for another piece of property in the general.
We wouldn't necessarily need to do that because they're designating that property as parkland.
Mm-hmm. But I thought you said that they're closing it.
That's the city's.
The park
water
in the city
yeah.
that they are closing is inside the city.
The Waterworks Park,
it's Waterworks Park is going away.
That's where it's at.
Yeah.
So
it's in the city and it's actually a public works property. It's been used as a park many, many years.
It was
park
owned by the
park.
It
but it's never was... It was never actually designated
or classified
as a park.
Okay.
And the benefits of making this transaction is that the county, if we were to retain this park, it would remain undeveloped for several years. Who knows how long it would take for us to develop it. The city is very motivated to construct a park, you know, much sooner. They need to take action on Waterworks Park, which means they need to get going on this new park property. So more than likely within the next 2 or 3 years that park will be developed, and that does benefit the entire neighborhood.
And we're talking about the property that Sue was talking about earlier, which she would love to see developed, I think.
I would love to see it developed. Yeah, but I'm just...
Well, development is, there's going to be some passive features. Just talking to Julianne, the parks director, you know, the forested area. That's going to remain. It's not like they're going to click at it and start over.
There's going to
be, it'll be passive. There will be some components of the park, like a community park would have, restroom, shelter, maybe a skate park, trails, that kind of thing, parking lot. And so that would be, the park would be turned into.
Oh, really? Okay.
Community level.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say to you earlier, I said that you know, I didn't know anything about what was going on. I do have to say that Kelly and Barbara have really been open neighborhoods, and I appreciate that. But I would like to see the group have something where it's, you know, it's in writing, it's part of your plan to work with neighborhoods. Let us know what's going on before it happens. Not after.
Sometimes we don't know what's happening.
That's true too. Yeah, and even I know what you're saying.
We shared this information with Linda, with the East Mainland Neighborhood Association. That's coming out in the newsletter.
Yeah, I've got a copy. Do you want me to read what it says?
Sure.
Sure, if you like it.
Schaefer Park. The city of Vancouver needs to relocate their Waterworks Park, and working with Clark County Parks, have determined Schaefer Park would be a good site for this relocation. The Clark County Parks Advisory Board has approved the transfer of Schaefer Park to Vancouver City in exchange for the county share of the property fair market value. Bill Majort, park manager, CC Parks, shared that the park was purchased by the city and county in 2010 for $2.8 million. The value has dropped considerably since 2010. The 2014 fair market value is $1,886,000, and the county share is $1,093,880,000. The final amount is still being negotiated. A staff report will be submitted to the Board of Commissioners for consideration and final approval. According to Bill Bajor, transferring the property would improve the timeline of the property being approved into a park much sooner than if Clark County retained it. When the Board of Commissioners approves the transfer, a news release will be issued.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
pretty close.
Pretty close.
Sound good?
Thank you. Okay, you got any more on that?
No, but that is actually this document. I didn't want to hand it out to you because it's truly a rough document, and we have a lot of changes to make. So once we get closer in the process of this winding up the affairs, there's some of the property transfers other than the Schaefer property. We're thinking about pulling those back up. There was an Alki property, which is on the Brumfish Creek Trail, and that is completely surrounded by city services. They actually maintain that entire stretch of trail, and the county owns a small chunk there. It would make sense for the city to have it, but I think we're going to pull that off for now. The Vancouver Lake Lowlands was another piece of property that we're talking about transferring, but that is it's encumbered as well through grants. And the one thing we want to do is try to expedite this deal so we can get a PIF fund sooner. So that, I think the lesser amount of work or dealings with property, the better at this case. We can, if we need to take a look at
transferring properties back and forth for the better of the public in the future. We can do that, but I don't think we need to tie it up right now. So more to come on this.
Would it maybe be better for us that when you have a document that you're feeling a little uncomfortable giving to us because it's draft, that maybe you just be like that document says, put a big draft over it, so we can at least start seeing the actual effort.
Yeah.
We know things are going to change, but maybe we'd be better prepared if we didn't wait till it's all.
We can do that, sure.
Because I could see, hold that document up, the draft up. If we got things, you guys would have to understand that it isn't cast in concrete until this draft is away, but at least we'd be able to keep ourselves closer to where we're at.
And that's the one thing that I worry about is that, you know, we leave this meeting here and we take documents out and act as if they're factual when they're in draft form, and there might be a lot of work left to do. So I just don't want to be misconstrued because that would come back to us kind of negatively. Yeah. So,
I'd like to add to that, I don't want to get into a situation where I'm only provided the final. I mean, if that's the case, I can wait till you finish with the general plan and I'll sign off on it.
Yeah.
That's not why I'm here.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I'm not going to challenge, you know, every word on that page or whatever, but I do think that out of respect for us volunteering our time and putting in as much energy as we are, we need the right to be able to cut or help. We may even be, you may even find places where we can help you.
Absolutely.
You might find us helpful.
No,
you understand what I'm saying? And I understand that you're thinking too, but believe me, there's going to be stuff that goes out in the public that's totally misconstrued and there's nothing you can do about it. So just get used to it.
Okay, we'll do.
It might make it easier on all of us to have it that way.
Yes.
Okay. So let's stay on track here with the agenda. You want to move on to your next item of the new business?
What's your current activities? Current activities. You ready for the slideshow, Jeremy?
Yep.
And again, this is these are activities that have been going on with park development, and again, Scott Brantley, our project manager, has been very invested in all these projects. And so this is kind of a summary of what we're going to be looking at in the slideshow.
And you do have a copy of
You guys have a copy of this PowerPoint presentation here. But the Pleasant Valley Community Park Bridge, Parks and Construction, which is Chinook and Dogwood, Fresh Prairie Office Parking Lot and Trails Improvement, and Finalized Development and Use Agreements, which is American League of Vancouver and Vancouver Municipal Senior Softball Association, and then the Active Men Online Reservation Program. So go ahead, Jeremy. So this is the new bridge that was lifted into place down at Pleasant Valley. And if you get a chance to go down and take a look at it, it's very impressive. 160-foot-long bridge, is that right, Scott? And there was a 500-ton crane that lifted this in one piece and straddled across the river and put it down on its foundation. And what this will do is it will provide a critical link between Pleasant Valley and Washington State University. And so it spans over Standing Creek, and then it services, Pleasant Valley services the Highlands Neighborhood Association. There's thousands of people in that association. There's a lot of folks walking across. And so the next phase, this bridge right now comes out to Sand Creek Avenue, so the next phase is to put the trail in across the street from Sand Creek Avenue that ties into the entrance of Washington State University. So that'll take place next year, is that correct?
March, yeah.
March of next year, okay.
And that's a battleground school district.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. It is. Yeah, my son is there.
Yeah. So another good reason to maybe.
and just so most of us, I'm familiar with it, but a lot of people don't know where these parks are. So can we show them where it is? Or look on your map in your folder there as to where that park is.
One thing that we're going to do is we're going to have a big park map that we're going to develop and bring it to every park advisory board meeting so we can just
that would be very helpful.
So we're having that developed right now, right, Jeremy?
Yes.
Yes. So we point to these locations. So the first specific.
Let's do a holiday.
Pleasant Valley Park is off 50th Avenue. This park was just recently completed about a week ago, and the kids are already using it. And that's out in behind the Alki School.
Good job. That's awesome.
Piece of property. It's not quite done. I mean, the contractor still has some work.
We sent out a pretty lengthy punch list.
Yes, we did.
Work to be done. So, but it is open and being used. So
it's functional. People can get from the north neighborhood through.
Exactly. Yes.
That's awesome.
That's a great location.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
From the south end, winds around the lake and goes all the way across that bridge, ties into that neighborhood. And this is actually a critical link for the kids to get to school.
It's a very critical link. Yeah, I wrote a letter in support of that project.
School started.
That's awesome.
And this is Dougwood Neighborhood Park. It's kind of what it currently looks like right now. Thompson Brothers is the contractor on the site, and they just got started on it this week. Is that right, Scott? And so they were pretty rushed trying to get this park done first so the kids could start using it when school started. And now they're focusing on Dougwood Park. And so that'll be a nice addition. I believe the time frame
October 15th.
October 15th is when they should have it done by. So those are our next, next to that should be the 26th and 27th MPD parks that are constructed for us. Next up is Brush Prairie Off-Leash Park Improvements. This is how it currently looks right now. This is at 149th Street on Brush Prairie. And currently, folks, here's the parking lot that you're looking at right here. And so they come down here to the off-leash area to use the site, but they pull in and they also back out onto 149th Street, which is kind of a safety concern. This is a new parking lot that's going to be going in within the next month or so. I think it's going out to bid here real soon. Along with the parking lot improvement, we're going to be putting some ADA trails in, basically a engineered chip trail. We could not put any gravel surfaces down or hard surfaces because that would trigger stormwater, and which we didn't really have the space out here to deal with or the money. So we're trying to do this on the cheap. So putting a previous parking lot in that holds enough cars so they can properly pull in, turn around, and go back out safely. That should be a nice improvement.
Isn't that park pretty much on a dead end road?
It is. This road here, this is Ellen Ring Forest Preserve. This is a huge piece of property that Clark County owns right here. Yeah, I don't remember the acreage, but this is just a huge chunk of property here, and this is tied to it. We actually own this and leased it. That was a rental home.
Oh, wow.
So
can we bring that map up that you had earlier and show those so they can see that? Can we just bring the map up we had earlier and show those?
Oh, there you go.
Google Maps. Now that this GIS is so fast.
Yeah, it used to take
awesome.
Forever. Now we can.
Thank you, Clark County.
Fast also. Faster than I am.
So this is the existing dog park. It goes to here. You can see if there's anybody here.
Yeah. Actually, make it a little bit smaller. Yeah. There you go. So here's the. There's
now,
the
if you pull that here. In, you can see where it is in the county. If you.
Are you talking zoom in or
just zoom out?
Zoom out.
Zoom out. Okay.
Streets.
There you go.
Just see where we're at now.
Okay. So here's the off-leash piece that we're looking at. This is all, you know, Illinois Rainforest Preserve and Troxel property that we own. And we do have an access point off of Northeast 97th Ave just past the school here. It's pretty rugged. And it just comes to a dead-end area. We do have an easement coming up. Jeremy's got this property here leased out as well as this piece right here. And so it's kind of a, you park here at the end of a dead end and walk to the site. The parcel or the road that is adjacent or next to the off-leash area is considered a private road. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of in a little legal quandary as far as allowing citizens to access this park using this road. We've got maintenance access to it, but the neighbors along there say that they're pretty much down the line at that. We don't want people walking down that road or driving down that road. So the one thing we're going to do as part of this development is our property starts right here. We're going to put a gate in through the off-leash area so you can park here at the new parking lot, walk through the off-leash area, and access the park that way. So that should hopefully resolve that issue.
Is that park developed at all, or is it just
no? It is
this outside the greater park district? So how is this being funded?
Actually, it's being funded through
How is that being funded? I think it's being funded through REIT dollars. Do you know, Heath, by chance?
I believe it is, actually. I can find out.
I think it's REIT dollars.
Real estate excise.
So to answer Adam's question, this has a number of a series of informal trails. This is the part that we brush out, essentially.
There's a lot of school kids that walk through the park, really, to get to the school down south. And so it's got actually a very nice trail system. It's dirt, but it's actually well-established. So it's a walk through that's really beautiful. So it's a nice piece of property to visit. Getting to it is
You don't mow it?
Our North Park's maintenance staff maintains this little piece here. You see the open areas? They mow that. The rest of it is all natural.
Thank you.
Very, very small maintenance cost for us.
So can you go back quickly and show us where Pleasant Valley and Dogwood and Chinook are?
Dogwood.
Take it down to the...
Yeah, we like this view for now. It's easier.
This is Dogwood. Here's Dogwood.
Now go pull out so we can see it where it fits into the bigger scheme of things.
How far out you want to go?
There, that's good. Okay. 205 I-5 is always a good benchmark.
Yeah.
Right.
Only two roads I know
that's
for sure.
You got 503. This is the East Ridge Business Park right here. So for a good reference.
Okay. Now show them where
Pleasant Valley
is.
Yeah.
And it's right. No,
left.
It's up higher north.
Left. Left. Not north, but left.
Left.
Yeah. Oh, Pleasant Valley, did you say? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Pleasant Valley.
Yeah, you're there.
North.
The WSU is right here.
Yeah,
there it is right there.
Actually, right, yeah.
Okay.
So you can see the campus.
Yeah.
You see the road that runs through Salmon Creek Road.
How many acres are there?
35, I believe. That's Pleasant Valley.
Beautiful site.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Bring the new one.
See the bridge.
It used to be all apple orchard next to it.
So this is the one bridge we...
This is the old bridge that we shared with a neighbor here. This is pretty rough shape, and... It didn't make sense to update that bridge, so it would cost hundreds of more thousands of dollars to do that. So we're going to quick clean that bridge over to this person. They want to put a subdivision in here, and we want to be part of helping them with that. So the new bridge goes right here. It's right here, and so it's going to tie in, go right down here to the entrance of the WSU. So it'll be a really nice link once it's completed.
How do we get across the street there? We just do? It's not that...
I don't know if we're doing some kind of informal crosswalk. I don't think it's going to be a lit crosswalk, but I think it's probably going to be some kind of hash marks with some signs.
That's where we deal with transportation.
I was just going to say, we need to get Michael Derlith to get us a little sidewalk right there and a crossing hawk signal.
Great idea.
Let's do that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, but you know, this was designed because we requested...
When do we address the problems that are occurring because we have built these lovely little neighborhood parks that nobody can get to? When and where do I go with that kind of complaint?
A lot of that is in the trails plan, and as we work with that, we'll work with transportation to that degree.
Our
pedestrian system is important.
I have two right now next to me that I continually have complaints from folks trying to get to them. No crosswalks, no sidewalks, no ways to get even a stroller into the park. I mean, all that kind of stuff. And that's the place where we lose the value.
That's why we plug into the comprehensive plan, and the comprehensive plan will show some of those things as they do the transportation component of the county's greater comprehensive
plan. We can go back and make a look at that.
Plug in, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Can you show now the other two, just so they know? I know it's taking a little time, but I think it's important they know where these are.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking?
Can you show Chinook and Dogwood?
We just saw Dogwood.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I mean, Chinook and...
So we'll see Chinook here.
But to your point, Jennifer, this Chinook Park here, part of the thing that we requested from the beginning was on 149th, there's a huge amount of children that need to cross that fairly busy street in order to enter in on the northern end and over the little bridge into the park.
Yeah.
And it's like it fell through the floor. They're still not there, even though the park is essentially there, and they started school, you know, in September.
Yeah.
But not having a real connection between that transportation part and the park development itself, I think, is
It is critical. Can you see the 149th? Can you go up to where she's talking about?
And especially with the build-out of the new overpass.
How do we tie that into park development when we start thinking about who's the guy who used to come and talk to us with the walkable community guy? And he would always talk about connections and ensuring that your neighborhoods have connections to your parks that have connections to your X, Y, and Z, right? And it all comes back to healthy neighborhood. And that's a really good example is you can get everybody on the south side of 149th, which is a lot of people, but the north side is, you know, a little bit lacking in getting across that street, and that street's become very busy. So are we able to use funds to have road improvements to get connections better?
Well, the road itself is great. It's the crosswalks
well,
we need.
Yeah, but I think that's all in the same. They consider crosswalks, hawk signals, that kind of thing, all as part of the road improvements. And can we use PIF funds to improve road conditions?
Probably PIF
conditions?
Funds, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be probably more like a road fund that would do that. Like, you're talking like a mid-block crossing kind of thing?
Yeah, or even, you know, you come to it and you hit the signal. You got to get power there. You hit the signal, or it's solar powered, and you get the flashing lights, and so it alerts cars that you're crossing.
We actually don't. We don't have too many of those on our road system right now, but we're because they can be dangerous. You know, depending on where they are and they're located. But we're actually looking at one on Highway 99 right now, which will be a good test case to see how it works. It's just a really busy area, and you know, somebody gets hit on Highway 99 every year. It seems like. So we're going to try one kind of in the Fred Meyer area there to get people across the street. So,
And I agree that you need it on Highway 99, but on Highway 99 you at least have some signals that kids can go and cross with.
Or adults.
149th doesn't, and like we said, the last discussion, and I'd have to go back and look at my notes who it was with, but even a painted one, we're not asking for a lot, but even a painted crosswalk is better than nothing for these kids.
But there are a number of safety issues. I know I've battled to get an Andreessen crosswalk on Burbridge Creek for years, and we got it, but it there's a lot of consideration, a lot more than
there needs to be a tighter relationship there, I think, with the build-out.
Barbara, I can put this one on my list to talk to Michael about when we write our next Safe Routes to School grant.
That would be wonderful.
So this could be a connection, because it does connect that neighborhood to the school. This might be an ideal application.
It's got sidewalks. I mean, it's all built out with sidewalks
but
and such there.
It
it's just the crosswalk that's necessary.
It might
necessary.
Be a good candidate for that. So we don't apply
again.
I'll
talk with you after on it, and then I'll give you the details.
Yeah.
Because we asked for two, one at Second and one up on Fifth.
Yeah.
You're gonna hear about a lot of these issues. Jennifer and I worked through safe walking programs and stuff for years to try to get these things figured out.
And I'll tell you, after our experience with the Plantation Road issue over there near Salmon Creek Elementary, and it fell at like $2 million on the TIF list, we thought.
Let's keep moving on.
So Chinook Park is right here. This is the southern piece of it. This is another piece. I just brought this piece not too long ago to create that link into this onto this road here.
And you can see where the high school is. That's Fuller Park. Right?
To the left
Fuller
is
Park
the
schools are right over here.
Schools over there.
Can you scroll over just a little bit, Jeremy?
That huge vacant property piece.
This is also
it's not vacant.
Right. That looks
it
vacant.
Might look that.
Chinook, Elkhai, and Skyview. Yeah.
Correct.
There you go. That's
there you go. There's the three schools.
So you see where the blue box over the far end.
So this provides a critical link. You get our Wimble Creek running through here. And so that bridge is a great passageway.
So just awesome. Until we get more familiar with all these parks, I hope we can always have a map up so we can see all this stuff.
Yes.
Any others?
What else do we have here? Anything else?
Miracle League? What's Miracle League? Did we go to that?
Oh, they're bringing big dollars to the table.
Miracle League. Miracle League and Vancouver Metro Senior Softball Association, we just approved the two agreements with the board last week, 2 weeks ago, actually. And so that's going to provide the three ball fields to go in at the Pacific Park Community Park. So Vancouver Metro Senior Softball will have this full-size 300-foot field, and Miracle League will have these two fields that are
are, I believe they're going to be synthetic rubber for disabled children to play on.
Wonderful.
As a part of that, of this, they're going to, or the requirement, they need to put another parking lot in to handle the extra extra flow of the activities here. There's going to be a playground right in here, and we already have a restroom in this area right here. So so basically the three fields, the parking lot, and the playground. The playground will be ADA accessible.
Can I suggest that we only have 10 ADA parking spaces? That maybe, since it's an ADA field, we may think about adding more ADA spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
It might hurt the count for how many parking spaces you have, but we might have some issues if we don't do that.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because
Or even a drop-off pickup area, that might be helpful.
There's one right here. So
is there? That's good.
Yeah, there's a turnaround loop.
Well, that worked out. That's
now,
nice.
I know that they're bringing a lot of dollars to the table and essentially funding this at the community level, right?
Mm-hmm. What's that?
With donations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
On this. So who's doing the design part? Do they still go through the county design process? Mm-hmm. To get it approved?
So through the site plan review, that's how they they had to do the parking lot. That's why they had to do the parking lot.
Site plan review.
Yeah, usually the community parking lot, type 2.
And we have master plans for all these parks that we kind of use as a guideline.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in fact, ball fields were supposed to have gone into phase 1, but the county ran short of funding, development funding to do that. So these two groups stepped up and wrote up stuff, so that's fantastic. So we're pretty excited about that.
Well, we're running a little overtime here, so I hope that we're taking a little more time with making sure you know what we're talking about with these parks. But
there's one thing I wanted to also mention is that looking forward to the next 2 years and the next biennium budget cycle, it doesn't look like we're going to have the funding available to build the next phase of parks in 2015 at least, and possibly 2016. We're not sure. We're hopeful that we might be able to put some parks together to build them in 2016, but we're kind of lacking in PIF development funds right now, and there's also a secondary problem, and that is our we're running out of maintenance fund money to maintain the sites. And largely because back in 2010, when we went through the large crisis with the budget, we transferred several general fund parks over into the MPD and made that the responsibility of the MPD to maintain those sites. And currently, it's right at about $880,000 to maintain those general fund sites. What we're hoping to do is try to transfer the responsibility of the general fund sites, the MPD sites now back to the general fund. Yeah, so we can loosen up some funding to afford the new park development. So that's one piece of the puzzle. And then also having enough park impact fee dollars to help us build those parks. Now, there's other funds, of course, as we've talked about before, that we can use to build parks, but those are strapped as well. Real estate excise taxes are very limited right now, and they're actually they're being used for debt service to pay off debts. Grants, we fully anticipate going after grants this next year after this group comes up with a new comprehensive parks grant. Our number one task is going to be going after grants to acquire property as well as develop. And so that's going to be hugely helpful to us right now. So as it stands right now, our one and only avenue for acquisition and development is PIF funds. And so I know it's not the utopian situation, but I hope that we climb out of that soon.
But that kind of just gives us breathing room.
Right.
I'm not so sure that's such
it
a
does.
Bad. Right.
Well,
while we're in the process of this side of the divorce,
right.
All becoming aware of what's going on and how we can help, where we can go, and all that sort of thing. I think it's not a bad thing that we have to take a little breather. So,
mm-hmm. What's the average, if you don't mind me asking, to receive? How much grants are available out there? Like, what is there an average you would say that? Grants are given, are they yearly, or is it
no,
six?
No, they're on a biennial basis.
Okay.
Yeah, so we missed this year.
Right.
I think our cutoff was March of this year, and then on 2000, 2015, we can start working towards grants. 2016, we can actually apply for grants.
Yeah. Okay. And those are the RCO ones that you're referring to. Because there's other grants like the Meyer Foundation and Netter Foundation that are typically smaller amounts.
And there's also public donations.
You know
so that's another component.
You know,
so they're pretty significant, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you get pretty.
It's the only way we can tell the market system.
Right. There's a thought process out there right now that's going through, and that is if we cannot afford to build and maintain these parks, we might be looking out towards the public to give us a hand, volunteers.
I'm glad you said that, because I've always wanted to do this with schools, and we haven't been successful yet, but we haven't really had the opportunity yet like Parks does. But when a large development goes in, like I'll use Erickson Farms because I don't know how any of the financing was structured, but when Erickson Farms went in, they built a several little small parks for their community, and I don't know if their OCRs pay to maintain the parks, whatever. But as we're looking at needing so many per thousand and X, Y, and Z, that's kind of why I was asking with houses is, if you know a 250 home development is going in lieu of PIF funds, for example, can they build a park, because it'd be cheaper for them to build the park themselves on part of their land and property than to pay your PIF funds, and then they gift it over to the parks.
No.
They gift it over to the parks, and then we, you know, even if some of those are part of the MPD, how we build some of our community parks is through that development acquisition. And I'm specifically thinking of the dairy farm that's going to be coming around. I don't know how or what we did with Erickson Farms. Maybe we missed an opportunity, but that area is going to need a neighborhood park once that's developed, and it's going to be developed in a couple of years. So
that's actually has been going on, especially with Erickson. What they do is they will build or take a lot or two lots or three lots, mm-hmm. build a park in exchange for receiving PIF credits. So that in lieu of paying the PIF fees.
And then are we maintaining it then, or
yes,
do they?
It's not us that maintains it.
So. Okay. Who's going to maintain it?
We public park is public park.
Okay, I'm going to say because in our development, they were required to build one.
There are cases like that.
But the HOA.
We've gotten some trouble with some of them sometimes, so we'll have to look at them very closely.
Yes.
But I think it's an avenue that we need to pursue because we get so rigid that we don't see the forest for the trees.
So we can
and
talk about that more.
Those are great.
That'll happen
but
in our guidelines with the comp plan.
Okay, thank you.
How
the Little Red Barn, that facility, 43 homes, they're putting in two parks. And I don't know if we're exchange of PIF, but that's a huge selling point for them. That will fill with families, with kids, mm-hmm. and because it's so close to Philida School.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it'll be fantastic. But if they could have exchanged even some PIF funds and opened it up as a park, I mean, I don't know if that's ideal location for us to have park, but...
I know it's going around. We do not maintain those parks. Those remain private, but they do serve that community.
Amazing to me.
Well, I would say that slide on ours in my neighborhood, somebody set fire in there. And I'm telling you, for an HOA to come up with the dollars to replace that piece part, I think it was something like $3,000 just for the little piece to have it. You know how the little two slides are?
Mm-hmm.
It was just one little piece was burned.
Yes.
It was
very expensive.
Yeah. Not, playgrounds are not cheap.
No. So
okay.
Okay.
Now, one of the things I would like to have happen at the end of each meeting is what we call a round the table discussion. That means that everybody is going to participate with the discussion. So, after we get through with the current activities, we're going to have what we call round the table discussions. I just said, and I want to start right here and work around. And if you have anything that you've been wondering about or like to propose or just it's on your mind, I think you should take a minute and tell us about it so we get everybody's thoughts in on the table. So we are all on the same page here. And so I'm going to do that today with who's left here. And I think that Barbara has a little bit you should say.
I'll just give it to you as a handout. And I had to laugh because it's my dream. And y'all have heard
all
this.
Understand.
I mean, for the last 7 years, you've heard me, right? Blah, blah, blah. Well, here it is, folks. It's a big picture of a destination point that draws tourism, has a vision for the future of your BMX skate park. Critical, critical, critical. And I've fallen in love with what's called spray parks. they're the above ground, mm-hmm. so no worry about the little toddlers drowning. Okay, out there, Holly, in La Center, Holly
Seven,
Park.
Seven Creek Park's got one.
So, marvelous, marvelous things. Playgrounds, trails, picnic areas, and, of course, the community rec center. And I broke it all down for you here. But this is a vision that has been there, and we do, I want to tell you that along the line of the community jumping in, at the point that we thought we were going to move forward with this, we had $3 million semi-committed from the Meyer Foundation, for Fred Meyers, if you will, mm-hmm. for the pool, until we couldn't give them a site. And I have beat my head bloody.
And had a pool for you.
Yeah, yeah. No, they wanted it in a community center. You know, I'd put it in my backyard if that would work. But I'm saying the ability is there, but without the vision and the support, it's not going to get there. So, enough said.
Yeah.
Onward.
Adam? Horse trails. Next.
Horse trails.
Got it. You'll see a component in the trails master plan that does talk to that issue, and it's a topic that you'll hear a lot about.
Great.
Now, I suggest you get in touch with John Horse. Do you know the name?
What was the last name?
Commander of the precinct out in Rush Prairie for the Sheriff's Department.
Oh, John Horse.
He has started a campaign for funding and for location and money to rebuild the Brush Prairie precinct. Hmm. It's from that shack it's in now, but he needs a reputable place for it. And John is the commander there, and I would suggest you get in touch with him and combine your efforts.
What's his last
name? Forgot
again?
Putting a precinct, Horse. Police precinct on your whole puzzle piece. That'd be awesome.
Actually, you know, that property right behind.
Not a bad idea.
Out there, past yeah, behind fairgrounds, right by the precinct. That's where we wanted our skate park to start out.
Jennifer?
I don't have anything else on my mind. I just wanted to think about how do we think creatively about if we need to work with developers around getting the square footage per whatever we might need for growing populations and et cetera. What are those opportunities? And they always seem to have to start super early in the process. That's why it's really exciting that Jeff is here, because he sees that stuff first. That stuff comes to him at the very first thing when people are proposing. Yeah. So it's like, I know he doesn't want to spill the beans and, you know, get the developers all mad at him, but there is a real opportunity for the developers if they could structure the deal right.
Jennifer, who's your counterpart at Battleground School District?
You know, she oversees like what I do. Todd does MBJ in our office, so they've only got one.
That would give us
Mary,
at least some.
Mary Jane. I can't remember.
That's
her name.
All right.
My head's that terrible. We talk all the time. I'll send you her name.
Okay. Anyway, we appreciate you. And let me tell you, you have been really a help to me over the years. I'm glad to have you here.
Thanks. I'm glad you'll put up with schools in this part. We love it.
We love having you.
They're going to save us, whether you like it or not, they're going to save us a lot of money in the long run.
Yeah, it'll be good. That was it.
Sorry.
Any extra
for you?
That's
your team.
Good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great
time.
Appreciate
your
time.
Thank you. This has been an interesting afternoon. We kind of sat in, we live over behind Luke Jensen, and sat in on a few of the meetings when that was being developed, and just kind of watched, you know, didn't really participate, just kind of watched the whole process. So it's interesting to see it from this, see everything from this angle and be a little more involved. I'll be interested to go back and see, look at our parks and other schools and how we're cooperating in all this too. Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of schools that are co-mingle located.
Actually, you have probably the most of any of the school districts, because
at
the time when you were expanding, we were in a position to help work that. So
that's bad. I can't remember which of the buildings are in the county and which are in the city. And
Let's go back and look at that.
Yeah, it's a little tricky because we changed.
It's mostly the ones in the city that are connected. Your county school's not as much.
No, true.
It's great having you here. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for making a big map with all the parts on it.
Yes,
that would be really helpful.
I really think it's important that as we're talking about things, you have a vision in your mind of where we're talking about within the bigger system.
And up there is good, but I like a big picture.
Yeah,
kind of
it'll be nice on the wall.
I appreciate that.
It's tough because
you
know,
we're
creating a big map, but it's still hard to see the parks because you see all those Clark County.
I would recommend you actually make two maps. One that is the greater Clark Parks district,
mm-hmm.
because we have two parks departments. We have the greater park department districts, and then we have the region park system.
We could actually do that with our fifth map.
Yeah,
that would work.
What would be cool is if you. If you guys could overlay school district boundaries,
mm-hmm.
and if you could overlay your park districts as they currently are, and you can overlay city boundaries or county boundaries, so you can shade, change color, make lines, what have you,
and
that would be helpful.
We include the shaded areas of school districts, lands into it.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at a piece of property, you don't miss that there's a huge high school sitting next door or whatever.
There is some capability in GIS. I don't know how much you've played with that, but there are layers.
Mm-hmm.
So you could play with that. It's not always.
Well, no, we're thinking about making a map that's on the wall.
I could do one in about. I got a gal who works with your GIS.
Yeah.
So if you're having trouble making it, she's an AutoCAD specialist, and she'll just pop it in and lay it over and change the color. So
I can use 3x4s right now, but if they have to be bigger, we can talk about it at our next meeting because we'll have
to see it as big as that whiteboard over there.
It would be so convenient I was thinking that the whole time is layers, especially when you deal with some of the complexities of. It'd be interesting. So I'm just talking. So Matt, we can pause this thing or whatever. But just the idea of layering, having the layers of like where the money's,
mm-hmm.
what money or what
color of money? How much do you have and what color is it?
Yeah, like basically the darker the green, the more money you have, or something where you go, okay, well. We know, the population is red, but the color money is green. We know those two colors make purple. So
mm-hmm.
this would be a good area, to make, you know what I'm saying?
That's a good idea.
Where there's an overlay of circles where you can pinpoint the more accurately.
The real problem with that is where the money is and where the need is isn't always the same. And it usually is not just the opposite.
But if we had a map, it would be nice to know. Because to make
a
plan for us to move forward,
I
need to know where everything is.
Yeah.
Me personally, I need to know where things are. Because it's hard for me to say, let's put a park in Hawkinson.
Right.
Because I'm not sure if that's really where it's needed. I mean, that's where I live. So it would be like, it'd be great. But I don't know that that's where it's really needed. And so if we had a big map, at least it's easier to say, we don't have really enough in wherever.
Yeah. Well, we need that map for discussion. But you'll also have all your maps in the comprehensive plan. So there's plenty of that for when you're studying those things, you can reverse back
mm-hmm.
and forth.
And didn't the city folks put together a map of circles?
Yeah.
Do you remember that map that we had that had circles?
The service area for,
And it sort of went as. We did it to think.
I think the
maybe it's
probably signified the what it serves half.
Yes,
acre.
Yes, half acre.
Half
and they showed you where the where is that map? That was a great map because you could see where there were large holes in the service area, and you might go, that's because that's where the freeway is.
But that's what the planners will do for us. They'll throw us that sort of stuff.
Forget about
that.
We'll have to handle that kind of stuff.
It's just when we're talking about parks like
that's a great map.
You
got to
know where they are. It's just hard to
understand. One quick piece of information. Eric Christensen's here, and I forgot to mention it, but and Eric is our facility scheduler. And do you want to mention that as far as what we plan to do here in October?
So currently, reservations for 2015 for shelters is not available, but it will be available as of October 1st.
Great.
So, once we get to that date, our software system is set up for the 365-day rotating system so that we can
really provide that service to the customer year-round and then get away from having one
big day.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a great idea.
Which is uncomfortable, I guess, to put it mildly, for both customers, and also for staff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting to that, and the system's been up for 5 months now. 5 months. April 1st, we went live, and we received about 1,200 permits. Created about 1,800 customer accounts.
Wow.
And our online conversion, or basically online reservations, just by the customer and doing it him or herself, has been about 34%. So that's good. That's 400 customers that are not coming through the doors or calling, and they're taking care of business themselves.
Cool.
The average conversion rate, I'm told, is about 30%, so we're doing pretty well, from at least according to what our account manager is telling us. Mm-hmm. And then, just as a basis of comparison, for a comparable, I know the city of Vancouver in 2013, their online registration percentage was 26%, and this year, right, year to date, they're 22%, so we're doing okay. Granted, our sample size is much smaller than City of Vancouver, because they have recreation classes and all that. But it's proving to be effective. We'd like to increase the percentage of online reservations we receive, but that should hopefully increase over time as everyone becomes more familiar with the software.
It probably behooves us all to just go look online and see how that all works, just so we know.
Go to the park's homepage, and there's a big link that says book a picnic shelter here. And
just to feel how it feels to book a shelter.
Yeah.
Okay.
30%.
Candace, did you get everything you said? Okay. I think we're over time by about a half hour, but I think we were doing some education in the process. So we'll try to be more.
Thank you both.
Prompt on time next time.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah,
you had to go ahead and try to mushroom.